evening.
Good evening.
You don't have to applaud on the good evening. Okay. This is the Commission and Presentation Awards meeting of Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. It is traditional for me to ask somebody to begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. So I'm going to ask anyone here who qualifies for Social Security to stand up and lead us in the pledge. So please stand up. We're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance. If you qualify for Social Security, you will lead us with in the pledge. Everybody understand? Includes me. Thank you very much. On the count of three, one, two, three.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Thank you, our greatest generation. Sit. All right, we have a few different things on the agenda. The one thing is, I want to begin with a very, very special moment and day. It is Erev Halloween. That's what we say. But what it really is tomorrow, you don't turn 70 often. Tomorrow is Ricky Areola's birthday. Commissioner Areola, very well preserved. Thank you very much.
I will always be younger and better looking than you, Mayor.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. But we do want to all begin our meeting with a rousing happy birthday. Let's go. Hold on. Do we have a cake, Eric?
No.
Not yet? Well,
if you're leaving this to Eric, it's not going to happen.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would you like to say anything on your birthday?
I can make a wish.
Make a wish, but
you're still here.
Boy, it's hard to be the mayor. All right, we have for anybody who's here for the, this is a presentations and awards meeting, but we do have some business. We're going to do the business after the presentation and awards. So we're going to go through this is a rowdy audience. They're clapping for almost nothing, but that's okay. So we're going to go through our presentation awards, and then we're going to go through the business. And I have a little bit of a change in the order. Some folks are a larger group. Once you get it, you can stick around, but if you want, you can also go to do other business and go to dinner and celebrate. So I'm going to begin first with PA 17, which I'm just going to ask Commissioner Steinberg, because I don't think we have anybody actually here, to tell us about. Do you want to call up PA 17? PA 17.
Is Proclamation Breast Cancer Awareness Month, requested by Commissioner Steinberg.
Well, it's basically very important that every October we recognize the October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I know we're going to have at one of our upcoming meetings someone that's going to come in and speak to us about the statistics, and everybody should remember to get tested, males or females. This is an important test that can be detected and can save lives, but we're here to honor all of those and remember that this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So with that, Mayor, do you want to just do the honor of the official proclamation?
So whereas October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, an annual campaign in the United States, 268,000 women and 2,600 men are diagnosed annually. Realizing how important it is to have this kind of public awareness, therefore do we, as mayor and commissioners of the City of Miami Beach, hereby proclaim October 29th as National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Thank you, Commissioner Steinberg, for bringing this up, and your thoughts and your suggestions are well served, so thank you for that. Okay, we're now going to go to what I understand is, I believe it is Hispanic Heritage Month, and during Hispanic Heritage Month, apparently, this city has a history of recognizing its wonderful Hispanic senior citizens, some of whom may be in the room right now. If you fit that category, raise your hand.
You got to say it in Spanish.
Hablar en español.
Michael, help me out here.
¿Quién está aquí para celebrar nuestro mes de hispanidad?
There we go. But he said. So Commissioner Gangor is gonna tee us off on this, but I just first want to say gracias for all of our Hispanic seniors. You are our greatest generation. We are grateful for you. We love you, and all we ask is that you smile every day. So let's go, Michael.
Thank you so much, Mayor. And I'm going to do it a little bilingual. So I'm starting in English. As a Cuban American living here, I'm very proud of our heritage and proud of our country for celebrating this month, which ran from September 15th to October 15th of every year since 1988. We start the celebration, by the way, in the middle of the month because it coincides with National Independence Day in so many Latin American countries. And our city did an amazing job as well. We had concerts, we had festivals, we had awards. And even though our Hispanic committee really spearheaded most of these events, we have a number of seniors in our community that are volunteers that work on these events year and they come to all of the food distribution events as volunteers to help hand out food and do so much in coming and supporting our city. So en español, para mis amigos, siendo cubano-americano, viviendo en este gran país, estoy muy orgulloso de mi herencia y de todos ustedes. Me alegra que están aquí para celebrar este mes de hispanidad, que era de septiembre 15 hasta octubre 15. Esta celebración lo hicimos en muchos eventos en Miami Beach, conciertos, festivales, premios, y todos ustedes presentes hoy que vamos a dar un certificado reconociendo sus labores, no es solo este mes, pero es todo el año, cuando destruimos la comida, cuando hacemos cualquier evento, cuando necesitamos que ustedes estén presentes, este grupo siempre están allí para ayudar. Y los quiero mucho. Este es mi grupo, mi Miami Beach. Así que antes de llamarlo por nombre, y todos van a subir cuando escuchan su nombre, quiero darle un momento a mi amiga Liliana Martínez, que organizó este premio. Liliana, ¿quieres hablar y decir una breve palabra? I'm going to have Liliana Martínez, who helped me organize this, say a few words.
Tengo una sorpresa de parte de las seniors. I have a present for the commissioners, for the mayor, for Michael Gongora, commissioner, Ricky Arriola, for John Elizabeth, for our commissioner, Mickey Steinberg, and for you, my lady. We got flowers.
Well, you have get. We're supposed to be giving certificates. We're not supposed to be getting things. Thank you.
Estas son para la comisionada. Alemán, gracias por su servicio de parte yes. de las seniors. Para nuestra lady Joy Malakoff.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask if when we all go down for the photo, when we take it. But unless somebody would like to speak, I'm going to start calling up names. All right. Cuando digo tu nombre, Diana tiene su certificado. María Ramírez, gracias. Mitchell, Alessandro, estás bella, gracias. Caridad Rodríguez, muchas gracias. Mi amiguita Viarda Besú, muchas gracias. Miriam Carrasco, gracias. Mi poeta, Sonia Caciar Mata. Mi amigo de Rebecca Towers, Bernie Collado. Mi amigo en la primera fila, José Robles. Mi gran amiga cubana, Coralia Fonseca, muchas gracias. Oh. Miriam Pimentel, la quiero, mi amiga dominicana. Norma Sierra y Manuel Caballo. Gracias, mi amor, me lo voy a poner. Magali Vázquez, gracias. Francisco Gola. Carmen Saer. Gilberto Fardales. Rosa Ramos. Álvaro Carbonel. Clara Pozo. Enid Thomas, mi amiguito, que es como mi tío, mi familia, Armando Pomar. Tenemos certificado para mi amiga Liliana Martínez. Y también para nuestras amigas Lía Mansur y Guadalupe Mercelar. Los queremos todas. Muchas gracias por su servicio todo el año. Y si hay un nombre que no mencionamos, ven para recibir reconocimiento también. Los queremos mucho. Thank you all. All right. Come on down. Now we're going to take a picture.
No sabía. Gracias.
Liliana.
All right, let's go. Okay, thank you all. Hey, Michael, can you get everybody? I would like to get. Okay, PA 1. Call PA-8.
PA-8 is Certificates of Recognition, Green World First Heritage Tree Designation, requested by Commissioner Alamon, PA-8.
Perfect. Thank you, everybody. So at our last meeting, Commissioner Malakoff and I had sponsored a heritage tree ordinance, and it was passed unanimously, supported by the commission. And it created, well, there was an existing designation of heritage trees, but it provided incentives and protection. Of course, we love our old historic architecture, but we also love the trees that have been part of our city for 70, 80, up to 100 years. And so we have designated heritage trees on public property, six of them. But I wanted to also, and they had a little situation, so they couldn't come tonight. They were supposed to come. The very first private property heritage tree designated. And so I have a proclamation, although they're not here, they can see this later, for Eric and Melanie Greenwald. And I just, yes, they're wonderful members of our community. And so the certificate of recognition says, on behalf of the mayor and commission of the city of Miami Beach, we're proud to recognize Mr. and Mrs. Eric and Melanie Greenwald for becoming the very first residents in the city of Miami Beach to privately designate a tree on their property as a heritage tree. The City of Miami Beach's Heritage Tree Program provides special acknowledgement to trees or groupings of trees that have distinct historical significance or are of unique or intrinsic value to the city. The Heritage Tree Program provides a unique way for residents and visitors to better appreciate these special trees and to learn of their environmental, economic, and social impact as part of a well-developed urban forest. So I will give them this proclamation, but I wanted to take a moment to explain the incentives of the Heritage Tree Program for private property. First of all, you get, this is just a replica of what it looks like, but a lovely brass plaque to display at your home to commemorate your heritage tree. A grant for tree maintenance from the City of Miami Beach, I believe it is $750 for every 4 years. Is that right, Omar? Our urban forester is shaking his head. You also receive an annual membership to the Miami Beach Botanical Garden for your family. And what did I miss? If there's any variances, county variances that are needed to designate your, this is the tree that was privately designated. It is a kapok tree, also known as the silk cotton tree, and it is native to the neotropics from southern Mexico to the southern Amazon and even to parts of of West Africa. This specimen that we're looking at is the largest of its kind recorded in the city of Miami Beach, and it's right in their front yard on LaGorse Drive. So if anyone would like to participate in the heritage tree, if you think you have a unique specimen tree, and there are a number of them throughout the city, please do reach out to the City of Miami Beach, and you can enjoy the benefits of the Heritage Tree Program. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much for that, Commissioner. Vice Mayor? No.
Not yet. No, until tomorrow. Or
still here.
We're waiting. We can't wait. Can't wait. Okay, next we're going to go to PA1, please.
PA1 is Certificate of Recognition, Jennifer Ohana, Eleanor Katz, Teacher Initiative Award, requested by Commissioner Gongora.
All right. Now we're moving on from Hispanic heritage to education. So it's my great pleasure to present these certificates, first to Jennifer Ohana, who I was so impressed when I read the Miami Herald Neighbor section and actually learned that you had won the Eleanor Meyerhoff Katz Teacher Initiative Award. And I wanted to recognize you, and you're a really good person. We reached out to you, and you were appreciative, but you said we couldn't do it if we didn't also honor your coworker, Juan Gonzalez-Lopez, who was integral to this entire grant process. So, Jennifer, you're an inclusive advocate that really wants to share the moment and serve your community to the best of your ability. So it's my pleasure. I'm going to read a little bit of your bio. For the people that don't know Jennifer, she's a middle school teacher in English at the Rabbi Alexander S. Gross Hebrew Academy for the past 18 years. She studied at University of Michigan before going to Boston University, earning a master's degree in education. And although you're a Northeast original resident, you've been living here for quite some time with your husband and four children in Miami Beach. And I hear that your colleague, Juan Gonzalez, was born in Puerto Rico and has been a science teacher for 21 years, first in his native country and the last four at the Hebrew Academy. Your endeavors as a science educator have included awards by multiple groups, such as the Oracle Education Foundation, Amgen Pharmaceuticals, Kadena Initiative, the House of Representatives, and most recently, the Coelit Prize for Interdisciplinary Education. You hold two master's degrees and also relocated to be part of our community. Jennifer and Juan teamed up to implement a project-based learning initiative for eighth grade students called Renewable Resources to Renew Lives. The program includes science, language arts, Judaic studies, and civics to help students learn to use environmental resources responsibly and use scientific knowledge to make a difference in others' lives. They're doing really cool stuff, like scavenger hunts, to bring in the science component. They're visiting the Kosher Food Bank to recognize the needs of families. They're really hands-on learning, understanding electricity needed to power homes and what solar power could do that. Really cool, progressive stuff like we like to do here at the City of Miami Beach Commission. You're both amazing teachers to future leaders of our community, and we're thrilled to award you these certificates of recognition. Thank you. And Please come up and say a few words before we take a photograph.
So first of all, we just want to thank you deeply for recognizing us. I was shocked when I got the email from Diana and that it was in the paper and that people are really recognizing our efforts. It's very important to us that in fulfilling our school mission, that our students understand their responsibility to change the world and to make it a better place and to understand both the needs for using their knowledge to really improve the lives of other people. So we thank you for that encouragement, and we hope to just continue doing more of that.
Thank you. A few words before we take a photo, Mr. Gonzalez.
Come on up.
I would like to thank you, all of you. And I think as an educator, it's always important when you are appreciated by your fellow teachers, but when your product comes out of the school and reaches the community, it's even more important for us, and we would like to appreciate your appreciation for all the video as teachers. Thank you so much.
On. I'm going to go to Marcella's here, yes?
Yes.
Come on up. I'll do it from right here. I'm going to call in 8, 10. No. Number 6, thank you. PA 6.
PA 6 is Proclamation Maricela Silva, retiring Unidad.
Right here. I'll say it right in front. I have one of these microphones. It's like the borscht belt. So today we're calling Maria Estella, Marcela Silva Day. Most of you don't know that Maria's actual name is it's Maria, but everybody knows you as Maricela. 30 years on Miami Beach, 10 years at Unidad, really helping so many of our seniors enjoy their lives, enjoy their meals, feel like they're important, and they are, and you are. So while this proclamation talks a lot about all you've done, I think really what we want to just say is it's easy. Anybody can do a job, but you do a job with love. And our seniors see it, and they appreciate it. You make their birthday celebrations that much more special. You make their every meal that much more special. And I know you're moving on, but we want to thank you for all you've done. So I'm really proud to say today, October 30th, is Maria Estella Marcela Silva Day here in Miami Beach.
Maricela, la queremos mucho. Felicitaciones.
Is proclamation Matt Rosenberg and Mark Gomez.
Gentlemen, can you come up?
Requested by Commissioner Arriola.
Yeah. So before I just stand over there, if you don't mind, guys, behind the podium there. Or if you feel like saying a few words, you can, if you don't want to be modest. So the reason I wanted to single out these two gentlemen, they're prime example of what Miami Beach is all about. What these two gentlemen have done, and it's been many years now, they have formed a community of local residents from I don't know how many countries are members of the South Beach Track Club, which gets together every Monday evening and has been going on for years and years consecutively, organized by these two gentlemen, for free, their own time, their own volunteer, their own blood, sweat, and tears. They have brought so many people from this community together to celebrate each other, to enjoy our parks, and to get fit. I don't know how many relationships and marriages you guys are responsible for. So many people meet at the track, and lifelong friendships and fellowship. And in addition to being great community leaders and bringing people together, they're both tremendous athletes. I've had the privilege of trying to run with these guys. They're world class. They're both respectively competitive in the Masters program. So let me tell you a little bit about each one of them, and I'll start with Coach Mark, as he's affectionately known. Mark Gnomes, am I pronouncing Gomes? I just know you as Coach Mark. But so Coach Mark moved to Miami Beach in 2010 from Boston, Massachusetts, to focus on training to represent the USA at the 2011 Masters World Track and Field Championships. And in 2016, he trained under the tutelage of Coach Joey Scott and Gabor Pastor at Miami's preeminent Olympic training camp. And there he amassed valuable knowledge regarding the principles of exercise physiology and speed training. And the application of these principles led to a world championship in 2016 and a world record in 2017. So congratulations, Coach Mark. Coach Mark then retired and joined Coach Matt Rosenberg-Passe in donating time to coach the Miami community. Coach Mark designs and administers track workouts, and they are killer workouts. I've had the, privilege of doing some of them. Custom designed to suit the needs and abilities of all comers. And every week, dozens of citizens from all ages travel to Flamingo Park on Alton Road to attend these workouts. Since the formation of the South Beach Track Club, nearly 3,000 people have checked into the group's Facebook page, a testament to the number of lives that have been positively affected by the South Beach Track Club. And I'll get to Matt in a second. Now, therefore, do we, as mayor and commissioners of the City of Miami Beach, hereby proclaim October 30th, 2019, as Coach Mark Day. Let me tell you about Coach Matt. Matt Rosenberg-Passe. Am I pronouncing the
Pass.
Matt Rosenberg-Pass, inspired by and in loving memory to his mom, Leslie Pass, has been a lifelong fan of running and participation in track and field events. He was a member of the University of Miami track team, and in 2011, he joined a casual track group meeting on Monday nights at the Flamingo Park track. And Matt led this small but dedicated group by holding training sessions along the Miami Beach Marina while the Flamingo Park track was closed for redesign from April to December in 2013 until the track reopened. And whereas South Beach Track Club was officially established in January 2014, and since then has provided the Miami Beach community, South Florida residents, and a long list of visitors from countries all over the world with training expertise in partnership with co-coach and 2016 World Masters 400-meter champion Coach Mark. And whereas South Beach Track Club grew from a few runners to now regularly hosting 35 to 75 runners on any given Monday night, it provides this complimentary training with a fun spirit, personal dedication, and encouragement for all who come to learn how to run faster, warmly welcomes people of all speeds and ability levels, and its participation totals have been measured in the thousands of runners over the past 5-plus years. And whereas participants have continually expressed how important South Beach Track Club is to them for reasons including the development of meaningful friendships, health, athletic training, and many other significant personal benefits, now therefore do we, as mayor and commissioners of the City of Miami Beach, hereby proclaim October 30th, 2019 as Matt Rosenberg Pass Day. Thank you. You guys are never at a loss for words at Track Club. Do you want to say anything?
Thank you, of course. The only thing I'd really like to say, not to divert attention from this honor, but I'd like to thank the City of Miami Beach for having put that track in place. A few years ago, you may remember, it was just an asphalt oval, not really fit for what we're doing, and You know, now what we have there is a state-of-the-art, one of the best tracks in the state, in my opinion, for training, one of the safest tracks in the state for training. And so thank you for making that possible.
And along those lines, by having such a nice track, the ability to have people together, we have such wonderful representation from our friends, the colored shirts here, South Beach Track Club. Without any of that, none of this happens, and we're so grateful for it. Thank you.
PA-13 is Certificate of Recognition, Robin Malik, Committed to Gift of Life Organization, requested by Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you.
13.
I'm going to give it a quick minute. We got some cuties up on stage.
I'll tell them I saw you.
Happy Halloween. All right. Good to see you, ladies. Okay, I'm super excited. We've had a lot of great awards and proclamations. The next one is for my friend, Robin Malik. Robin is responsible. Yes! Woo! Robin is responsible for overseeing the development department at Gifts of Life, including all of their fundraising activities. She's a lifelong resident of our community. She earned her Bachelor of Arts at Barry University in psychology and a graduate degree at Nova. And after graduating, Robin began practicing as a licensed mental health counselor part-time and began her work in the nonprofit fields. Robin previously worked as the director of development for Miami Beach's Hebrew Academy. They're all over the place tonight. And Robin was the associate executive director of the Miami Beach Jewish Community Center. You've been in fundraising for 18 years, and you continue to be passionate about giving back to our community. So when this opportunity at Gift of Life to join their team presented itself, it was as if all your experiences before came together. And as I've heard you say, as Robin says, to save a life is to save the world. Robin feels it's an honor and her calling to be able to give back through the Gift of Life. She recently organized an event at Flywheel with the Miami Beach Police Department for the Gift of Life Merrill Registry, where the mayor and I forced our aides to spin for charity. Because that's how we roll here. So I know that Commissioner Steinberg is co-sponsoring this and would like to speak. So before I turn it over to Robin and your special guest, our Deputy Chief Wayne Jones, we'd like to hear from Commissioner Steinberg and then ask you all to speak.
All I was going to say is this is so long overdue. Robin, you have done so much for this community. I know how much you care. This is more than a job for you. This is really something you believe in, and this is about saving lives. I've only known you since we were 8 years old, but I'm not obligated to say that because it is true. And so thank you for everything you do. This honor is well, well deserved.
Thank you. Thank you. I won't speak too long, but this is truly incredible. Thank you so much for this honor. I joined Gift of Life about 4 years ago when I heard Jay Feinberg, our founder and CEO's story. I was so moved
how he is now a 24-year transplant survivor, and his whole goal in life is to make sure no one ever dies of blood cancer. I was so inspired how he truly pays it forward every day of his life. Next thing I knew, I was traveling across the country, spreading awareness just how easy it is to save a life. But my favorite trip is always coming home across the Julia Tuttle, because there's no place I'd rather be. It is so wonderful to see my two passions coming together. I am so proud of our city of Miami Beach. It is such an honor and a blessing to partner with our Miami Beach Police Department, our fire department, and our city commission to help us save lives. It is so inspiring, and I'm so blessed to be a part of our Miami Beach. I am thrilled to announce that on November 14th, we will be honoring the Miami Beach Police Department with a Community Partner Award at the Gift of Life Celebrating Life event at a private home on Palm Island here on Miami Beach. I hope you will join us, and for more information, please don't hesitate to contact myself, rmalik@giftoflife.org. Thank you all so much for this incredible honor to our City Commission. Thank you for all that you do. And to my dear friends that are here, and especially my mom.
Yes. And special shout out to Carla Probus for making this happen.
So Carla Probus is a connector, right? She connected me and Robin, and I was so impressed the very first time I met Robin because she's passionate about this. She's passionate about saving lives. And to me, the work she does every day is God's work, right? It is God's work because she's committed to making sure she signs up enough people, constantly signing up people to save the lives of others. And so for that, I honor you. I don't deserve to be standing next to you, but I appreciate you recognizing me. The police department, Miami Beach Police Department, I think is a true partner with A Gift of Life for now and for the foreseeable future. And I'm so glad our colleagues from the fire department joined us last time in the fundraiser, so much so that I've challenged them in the effort to raise money for Gift of Life to a competition. So, to be continued.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Steinberg, Carla, come up.
PA18 is City of Kindness Certificate, Robert Arkin, Above and Beyond During Hurricane.
Yes, thank you. All right. We give out some interesting awards at the City of Miami Beach. And one of the new awards that we do give out is in conjunction with our City of Kindness movement. We have a resident that I want to talk about right now and highlight. I have a certificate of recognition that's going to be presented to Robert Arkin for going above and beyond in providing aid and relief to those affected by Hurricane Dorian in the Bahamas. We all know what a travesty Hurricane Dorian was and how it's still going on for them over there at the Bahamas. And so our resident, Robert, has done something extraordinary, in my opinion. He took a first mission. He's a pilot. His first mission was a search and rescue of Jad Allison's daughter, a resident of Miami Beach, with only a text saying that she had survived the storm. That was all he needed. And right away, he took off to search and rescue and find her. I won't get into all the details. You can give maybe more of the synopsis of it, but he found her. He rescued her. He was able to fly there, charter a boat of some sort, get transportation, make it all happen. It was incredible. They ended up leaving Treasure Cay and coming back to Opa-locka. It was an hour and a half flight back, but they did it. Robert, along with his pilot companion, Tony Pacetti, arranged to transport donations to the island as well, as Tony made arrangements to have volunteers collect and sort donations with the Community Church of Pembroke Pines. Robert arranged for logistics and pilot acquisition for the donations to be flown to the island. After arranging for the storage location, courtesy of Diversified Aviation, Robert proceeded to make delivery of the donations received by the church. After several trips to the island, Robert was contacted by Judd Allison, who teamed up with Third Wave Relief volunteers to help deliver additional donations and help transport volunteers to and from Freeport and Treasure Cay for the next 4 weeks. Robert has transported more than 6,000 pounds of donations, medical supplies, to the islands of Freeport and Treasure Cay. Robert has flown over 48 flight hours, carried 32 passengers, 250-pound Great Danes, two cats, five Bahamians, five pilots, 41 flights, 27 ocean crossings, 100 hours of service. Robert, of course, was joined by his amazing, wonderful wife, Rochelle, who happens to be a teacher and is amazing, who accompanied him on four of those flights. And Robert also had five other pilots who assisted with these flights. And so when we talk about people going above and beyond, you know, he took it upon himself. No one asked him to do it, and he did. And I think it is so worth the recognition. And I know you don't do it for that. I think you were surprised when I called you and said, you know, I'd like to recognize you for your efforts, because it's something that we have to remind ourselves they're still going through it. And you're continuously helping in any way you can. So please, Robert, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mickey, and the commission appreciate you for this recognition. We were lucky. We were spared by a massive storm, and the storms get worse and worse every single year. And we got spared. It ended up on the island, and that first trip, when I saw the thousands of people without homes in Treasure Cay looking to get off, and the Bahamians weren't helping themselves, I had to go back and help. It's like eating a Lay's potato chip. You can only eat just one. You got to go back and you got to help. And we forget. We're in our houses. We're in our air conditioning. We have electricity. These people have nothing. There were 70,000 people that were homeless. There's 3,000 plus people that they have not admitted that have perished during this hurricane. I will tell everybody, from what I've seen from the air and what I've seen from the ground, when there's a hurricane, please leave Miami Beach. There was a minimum of 8 feet of water that covered the island. Almost the entire island was covered. So when they say, please leave, leave, okay? It will save your life. The water's got up to 27 feet. It was complete devastation. It's heartbreaking to see what went on over there. And we had Americans over here that were over there that had to come back, couldn't have the transportation back. We helped them get back. So help out if you see. They still need donations. It's still a rebuilding. We've gone ahead and we started a tree recovery program where we're producing wood from the trees. So we keep on helping. So look out. Give your donations, help out, because it could have happened to us, and I'm just grateful that I can help.
I just want to tell you, I followed it on Facebook, and it sounds like it was extraordinary to have to fly back and forth and do all this. It's not like the flights were even easy, because you really had to struggle through a bureaucracy, through physical obstructions. It seemed like every time you did something, it was not easy, even though what you were doing was hard to begin with. And I just want to tell you that for those of us who watched it and watched you, most people just brought, as I did, stuff to the local fire station. You really went so far beyond what would be expected of any great person. So we're really very, very, not simply compliment, we're very grateful to you for making us look
thank
so
you very
great.
Much.
So thank
I,
you very
I have
much.
To thank my wife, because I got to tell you, without her, she was my support. She was there, making sure that I had dinner when I got home late at night, and she flew over there with. It's dangerous. It's not, we're in a single engine plane flying over. It's not easy. She went with me, a bunch of times. She's a good sport. And thank you very much.
Good co-pilot. Yeah.
to do five? Samuelin?
You want to do the Ocean Drive?
Yes.
Nine.
PA 9.
PA 9 is Proclamation Mayor's Panel on Ocean Drive, requested by Commissioners Samuelin and Areola.
Before I turn it over to Samuelin and Areola, who we got here from Ocean Drive? We got, I see Frieden. Is Plutzik here?
Yep.
Why don't you guys come up? I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues, but I just want to first thank you both. It's so important what's going on to have people who care about our community who are willing to give up their time and their most valuable resource, which is their time and their energy. And we are very grateful to all that you've done. I'm going to let my colleagues who each participated and have, and frankly, Commissioner Arell is not his first time around this merry-go-round, but to let them just sort of talk about your efforts and what you've done. We have a lot of ordinances we've done already. I think hawking is stopped, and at least Ms. John will make sure it is if it hasn't. But I'd like to Commissioner Samuelin and then Commissioner Areola to talk a little bit about your efforts.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for your leadership forming this committee 1 year ago, and you gave us very clear direction. You said you wanted action. And I can stand and sit before you today very proud of what this group did. So this committee had two subcommittees, a Security, Safety, and Infrastructure Committee, which I worked on, and a Business and Culture Subcommittee, which Commissioner Areola did. And we were very focused. Ocean Drive is the heart of Miami Beach. Ocean Drive is the heart of Miami-Dade. And we want to make it the very best it can be. And we want to make sure it's a safe and fun place for residents and visitors. So we all went to work, and as the mayor said, we worked on elevating some of those business practices, and I'm glad to hear that we don't have that hawking going on, a secret shopper program, development of an enhanced pedestrian experience, potential rebranding, and the bottom line is we want Ocean Drive to be the best it can be and people to come, and it's because of your great work that we're getting there. I want to recognize Commissioner Areola so he can offer his thoughts as well.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what Commissioner Samuelin just said. Mayor, thank you for forming these committees and the people you selected to serve on them. We still have a lot of work to do. We all know that, but we are chipping away at it. I think there's a lot of good things on the horizon, as Commissioner Samuelin talked about, the anti-hawking legislation, which seems to be taking root. I mean, I think there's some exciting initiatives that we're exploring, including closing Española Way, or making Española Way fully connected to Ocean Drive and closing down 15th Street, experimenting with closing Ocean Drive one week in a month, see how that goes, actively programming the area, and then, of course, the formation of the South Beach bid are just a few of the things that are on the horizon that I'm very excited about.
That's great. I just want to recognize a few folks and then invite our chairs to speak. Amy Mayhew, as our liaison, did just a fabulous job. We were chaired by Jonathan. Real nice job. We were chaired by Jonathan Plutzik, who also led the Business and Culture Subcommittee, Jonathan Frieden. We've got Gerald Schwartz with us, Joe Manning, Gregory Branch, and, of course, John Dutzman, some other folks who couldn't be with us tonight but did such good, nice work, Jeff Feldman, Ricardo DiPico, Frank Ferreira, David Castillo, Frank Amadeo, Britta Hansen, Jen Roberts, and Don McCall. It was an amazing team effort. I'd like to recognize the chairs if they want to say a quick word.
Well, thank you. I think I've already, and you, Commissioner, have already thanked Amy Mayhew, so I just want to thank her again because there's no thanking her enough for all of her work on this. I do want to thank Commissioner Samuelin and Commissioner Areola for all their assistance, as well as Police Department, Captain Campbell, Captain Robinson, Officer Ozeda, Captain Morgallo, who's now in charge of the area. Thank you to them for all their support, and to the my fellow subcommittee members who are here. Thank you for allowing us this opportunity to help.
Thank you.
Just a quick one. Can tip my hat to Commissioner Areola. I know you and we are just getting started. Look forward to more. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. And I wanted to pick two people whose name was Jonathan, and I did. That was my goal. Thank you for your leadership and to all the members of the committee. We're going to keep on this because this is we got to tame this thing and create the kind of place we all want to be in all the time, anytime. So that's the goal. So thank you very much, and let's give them a proclamation.
should know what a great job Amy did. She really did.
We keep thanking you.
PA 15 is City of Kindness Certificate of Appreciation, South Beach Group Hotels, requested by Commissioner Steinberg.
Yes, so today we recognized a special certificate for our City of Kindness program to a resident, and there's also a business that I wanted to recognize today. The South Beach Group Hotels. This certificate that I'm going to be presenting to you all is for giving back to the community as well. And for any of you who don't know, the South Beach Group Hotels gave back and they chose North Beach was the place this time. They donated approximately $10,000 in school supplies to all the neighborhood kids. It was a great day. There were snow cones and crayons. It was such a success that they're actually planning on doing it again in the spring. So it's going to be amazing. And so thank you for giving back and being a good business partner in the community and wanting to do your part.
Commissioner Steinberg, thank you, but thank you, Mayor.
And I think some of my colleagues would like to say something as well.
No. Got to speak into the microphone.
Here it is right here.
Young man.
I can't. Listen. So, you know, the old expression, it feels good, better to give than to receive. That's this moment. It was the hottest day in August. I swear it was. And my team, I can't take credit for any of this, said, Chris, we want to do something for the community. And it started out as something small, and it exploded. It was such an amazing day. Kids were lined up around the block and kept coming for more, and we went out to get more supplies. So it will now be a fall and a spring event because you have to give back. We are a community. So I would like to just give a couple
yes,
of names
please.
Here.
Recognize your, yes, please.
We have Chayla, Daniel, Carolina, David, and we're missing two, but they're not coming up.
Can you introduce yourself as well?
We see you.
And Chris Rollins.
Okay. Hey.
Thank you so much, Chris.
I can't take credit for that.
I'd like
thank
to
you.
Add
Chris.
Joy speaking.
Go
thank you. Thank you, Chris, not only for all you've done for the schools and your generosity, but also the generosity of the South Beach Group Hotels in supporting our cultural anchors in the city of Miami Beach. For many, many years, whether it's the Bass Museum, the New World Symphony, et cetera, et cetera. You all have always been there, and we thank you so much.
Well, no, you're very welcome, but it feels good. We are a part. We're a family.
That's wonderful.
It Chris, is. I also am going to add my kudos. I think I couldn't think of a better corporate sponsor to receive a kindness award for 30 years since I met you. You're one of the kindest people, one of my favorite people, and somebody who's always willing to help out and lend a hand for every good cause that comes before you. So I'm
so excited
to hear.
You're going to make me cry, Michael.
Here.
So
yes.
You're going to make me get teary.
Well, thank
always.
You.
That's very kind of you to say.
Thank
but,
you.
It's all done with love.
Did anyone mention, because you also, South Beach Hotels Group, supported the Miami Classical Music Festival and provided them all the wonderful classically trained musicians from all over the world were here this summer, and you were a wonderful host and put them up. And so again, just another, as Commissioner Malenkoff said, another way that you are really supporting the arts and the transformation of Miami Beach to a global arts and culture destination. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Pink. so tall. I'm standing on tiptoes.
Are all of the Delisles present? No?
No.
Not yet. Okay. 5 minutes. Sorry.
How about our, Mark, is yours here?
No. That'll be just
which one is that? Oh, 12. Let's do 12. Sure. Is Rudy? I don't see.
So PA 12 is proclamation, Rudy Perez, contributions to community, and his new book, requested by Commissioner Gongora. PA 12.
All right. Turn on my mic for this one. I want to make sure that I'm heard. Talk about Hispanic Heritage Month and important Hispanics in our community. And the name that a lot of people would come to mind, certainly one of the biggest stars, is our North Beach neighbor and friend, Rudy Perez. Give it up, Rudy. Rudy, for those of you that don't know Rudy, he's a Cuban-American musician that's really lived the American dream and made it big in his field here in the United States and worldwide. But he's always given back to our community with his lovely wife and partner, Betsy Perez. You both are amazing, amazing parts of our North Beach community. Rudy, your accomplishments are huge. I can't believe you don't have a proclamation. You're a multi-Grammy award-winning international songwriter, producer, arranger, entrepreneur, and philanthropist. You have composed over 1,000 songs, with hundreds of them becoming number ones or top 10 hits on charts throughout the world. Some of the artists that you have written and produced for include Beyoncé, Julio Iglesias, Christina Aguilera, El Divo, Natalie Cole, Michael Bolton, Mark Anthony, Jose Feliciano, Cyndi Lauper, Arturo Sandoval, Andrea Bocelli.
Wow.
I can't think of who you haven't worked with. You are the only Latin record producer to be named Billboard's Producer of the Decade. Okay, you sit on the board of ASCAP, and you've won Songwriter of the Year at least 5 different times. You're founder of the Latin Grammys and the Latin Songwriters Hall of Fame, which you now produce this wonderful show that I'm so jealous that I had to miss, La Musa Awards, as it's now known, which I remember starting it in 2013, you, Betsy, Desmond Child, and I was lucky enough to be your person to get up on stage and do the welcoming awards, where I was really nervous, and I'm seldomly nervous when I'm speaking, but it was such an important show at the New World Symphony Theater, and I want to bring it back to Miami Beach, so we're going to work on that for next year. Recently, Rudy came up with The Latin Hitmaker, the book that I'm holding right here, written with best-selling author Robert Nolan and published by HarperCollins. So for the first time, you shared your remarkable journey with the world, from being a young refugee from Cuba to becoming one of the biggest, most important songwriters and musicians to hit the world stage. Your book is a must-read for anybody who loves the entertainment industry, as I do. So, on behalf of the mayor and the entire city commission, we are proud that October 30th, 2019, will forever be known as Rudy Perez Day in the city of Miami Beach.
I am just completely humbled by this. You know, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, commissioners. I'm, you know, coming from the city that I love and the guys that run the city, our leaders, that means the world to me. So I'm honored, everybody. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thing.
Oh,
let's go on there.
There is no thing.
Do some thing.
Acknowledge.
business. But we haven't done, where's, we didn't do Alex Dennis. People are not here yet.
I have 14 if nobody has anything else lined up.
We have PA3, PA7, PA14.
PA14 now.
PA14? Do 14? PA14 is Certificate of Recognition, Tom Virgin Service Award in Art Education, PA14.
All right, I'm excited, and this is the last time you'll hear my voice tonight with a proclamation or award. I'm super excited because I love recognizing educators, and I was thrilled when Tom Virgin was brought to my attention for recently receiving the Distinguished Service Award in Art Education. Tom is originally from Michigan. He relocated to our community, receiving his BFA from Florida Atlantic and his MFA from the University of Miami. Go Canes, my alma mater. Tom's work has been exhibited as an artist in the Miami Art Museum, the Low Art Museum, and the Frost Art Museum. In addition, his works are in the collections of the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, UC San Diego, Vanderbilt University, University of Denver, the Bienes Museum of the Modern Book, and the Jaffe Center for Book Arts in South Florida. He's previously been supported with an Ellie's Creator Award, a Night Arts Challenge Grant, a Wavemaker Long Haul Grant, the Helen Salzberg AIR Fellowship, a Florida Artist Enhancement Grant, a Miami-Dade County Cultural Affairs Artist Access Grant, and many more. You are very well granted and supported. You have been building community around classrooms and printing presses recently while teaching at Miami Beach High. Tom's life's been split between teaching and learning. He's a part of the community that brings young people and older experienced people together, like the mayor, to prepare each other to face the real world. Young people teach him about other cultures and countries, along with changes in the way they address each other as human beings. Tom does his best to offer useful skills for communication. Visual art is your core system of communication skills, which you pass along and teach, but you also encourage reading, public speaking, and research as methods of grounding communication in factual evidence. Several of your students have now become your peers with artistic practices of their own. Your regular conversations with students and colleagues prepared you to engage in collaborations with other writers and artists around the U.S. Most of your work involves print, book arts, installations, and public art, but we thank you and we recognize you today for your years of dedication to our future leaders and celebrate you and your award in art education. Congratulations, Tom Virgin.
Staff with you?
My staff is nobody. Nobody is anything without good bosses, without good leaders, and I'm grateful for all the children of Miami Beach and Hialeah, who taught me most everything I know. And if you were to ask them, they'd tell you that's true. Thank you very much.
Does your principal like to say something?
I have to. I'm sorry. I'm Dr. Rodriguez, the very proud principal of Miami Beach Senior High. And Mr. Virgin is just one of those individuals who, besides being an amazing art teacher, is an amazing human being. He's one of those individuals that you see, and when you see him, you just smile because of what he does for all of our students. And I want to thank our commission. I want to thank our mayor for recognizing him for everything he does. So thank you, Mr. Virgin, and thank all of you and the city of Miami Beach.
Thank you.
PA3, Certificate of Recognition, Alexandra Delisle, Doral Publix Junior Golf Classic, requested by Commissioner Alamon.
Thank you. And I would invite the entire family, including Coach Renderos and Grandma Cecilia, to come up here to the podium while I'm telling about how great you are. So I've known Alexandra Delisle since my son Jake came home and labeled her the fastest kid in first grade. I didn't say the fastest girl either. She was the fastest of all of the kids. She is a wonderful athlete and always has been, and most recently is really making us proud in her chosen sport of golf. And so I'm going to read a certificate of recognition for Alexandra. And I think this is really important because it's not, and I know this is a really great family that I've known for quite some time, a decade, I think. And what's great about Alexandra coming here and accepting this award from the city of Miami Beach is the example that she's setting for other young women who might be, never have thought that women could be successful in golf. And in fact, golf scholarships for women for college are the most unclaimed category of college scholarships. So to the extent that Alexandra being here today can inspire other young girls to get involved with golf, hopefully we'll see all those dollars getting captured for this great sport, which is really such an important part of Miami Beach. So I have here a certificate of recognition from the city of Miami Beach, which I would like to read to you, Alexandra Delisle. On behalf of the mayor and commission of the city of Miami Beach, we're proud to recognize Alexandra Delisle both for her representation of the city of Miami Beach at the prestigious amateur golf tournament, Doral Publix Junior Golf Classic, and her dedication to the game of golf. I don't know how many people realize how prestigious this tournament is. It is the most prestigious amateur golf tournament in the world. And Alexandra has represented Miami Beach in this tournament for the past 2 years, and she's the only girl from our city each year. So, yay. Alexandra is an 11th grader at Miami Beach Senior High School. She began playing golf with her dad, hi Rick, at the age of 2. At a young age, she attended the Ray Boone Golf Clinic at the Miami Beach Golf Club and clinics at the Miami Shores Golf Club, developing a love for the game and spending summers competing in the First Tee Summer Camp Series. Here, she earned 500 hours of community service, working as a volunteer, dedicating 2 days a week to working with children with disabilities from the Sandra DeLuca Foundation. 500 hours is quite a lot. Alexandra is a smartie. She maintains an A average, and she is in the top 2% of her high school class and has served as student government secretary. Some of her golf accomplishments include winning the South Florida Junior PGA Tournament, 16- to 18-year division this year, 2019, representing Miami Beach for the past 2 years at the Doral Publix Junior Golf Classic, being named Golf MVP 2018-19 at Miami Beach Senior High School, placing second in the high school district tournament, being selected for high school golf regional tournament, achieving Nautilus Middle School Golf District's team second place and individual second place. I mean, really, stellar golfing there. Also, her younger brother, Harrison, is quite the champ as well, but his day is another day. And she also placed in key categories for the Masters Drive Chip and Putt Contest. We're all so proud of Alexandra's accomplishments thus far. I know her family is. And it's really special that her parents and her grandmother are here today. And we know that she will continue to represent girls' golf and the city of Miami Beach very, very well. Congratulations, Alexandra.
Thank you for honoring me, to all the commissioners, and thank you to my coach who's been with me for, 13 years. Long time. So thank you. Thank you a lot.
I also understand it's your birthday today.
It is.
Right. Happy birthday.
Thank you. 17.
Come on up here. Oh, John.
10?
P10 is withdrawn.
I see the squad seems to be here.
Oh, I thought you meant
PA7 or?
Oh, no, not PA10. I did that already. No. PA7? Oh, okay. What do we have? Are there any others? We're going to do that after. We'll do some quick business. What?
No, I guess we'll put
these. Shall we defer that?
Tiva's here.
The children aren't here. Can we do some business?
Let's take care of some business, and then we'll get to the squad. Can we go ahead and begin with the are there any announcements?
Yes, sir. All the addendum items have been approved by the mayor. There's no need for an additional vote. The following items have been deferred. They are listed on your list. R7C, withdrawn, C7G, C7H, R9A, PA4. R9E has been withdrawn, but it's not on your list, so please mark it that R9E is being withdrawn. The following notations will be made to the after action. Item R9F is now a referral to neighborhoods, so there will not be a separate discussion. R9F is discuss implementing a policing plan requested by Commissioner Gongora, and Commissioner Gongora has agreed to refer the item to neighborhoods. We're adding Commissioner Malakoff as a sponsor to item R9B. We're adding Commissioner Samuelin as a co-sponsor of item C7F. We're adding Vice Mayor Areola as a co-sponsor of item PA9. And we've added Commissioner Steinberg as a co-sponsor of item R9C. The following correction is being noted for the record on the for item R7A on the first page, the recommendation section, and the fourth page, the conclusion section of the memorandum. We're deleting the reference to section 82-39B, and we're replacing it with section 82-39A. There's been one item that has been pulled from the consent agenda. Commissioner Steinberg separated C4E as an elephant from the consent agenda. Everything else may be approved, sir.
I move approval of the remainder of the consent agenda.
Seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Fine, show it done. Okay, so all the consent agenda saved, C4E has been taken care of. We're going to move C4E to the back. And let's now, I'm going to take something because I think Ron had a meeting, so let's take up R9C.
R9C is discuss homeless trust funding requested by Commissioner Areola and co-sponsored by Commissioner Steinberg. R9C.
Commissioner Areola.
Yeah, Jimmy, we got an LTC from you a week or two ago saying that the funding for this year, $250,000, that was going to go to the homeless trust is not going to go through because the money for that was coming from the short-term fines that we've collected, and given the litigation, you wanted to hold off on that. Is that correct?
Yeah, consistent with what we did, for example, with the red traffic light when we had that litigation. We sort of held those funds in abeyance. When the decision came down in the litigation involving short-term rentals, I just thought it was prudent to hold on to it and not disperse it until we at least had a conversation here at the commission about how you all wanted to approach that.
Yeah, I have a strong opinion on that. I don't think it's fair. These folks are relying on that money. It's not their fault that we appropriated it from a particular funding source. You know, had I known that that would be a contingency, I would not have favored that being the source. So, you know, I don't know how we're going to handle it, but I'd like to make those funds available to them.
Commissioner can vote and just give me direction. Go ahead and do that.
There's a motion from Commissioner Areola to direct the manager to look for, I guess it's non-recurring funds at this point, for how much is it?
$250,000.
So, Commissioner Areola, you want to make a motion to direct the manager to look for the funds and get back to us pretty quickly, and I'm going to open up the floor to talk about it. You want to make that motion?
Yes.
Okay, motion's been made. Is there a second? And then I'll ask for a discussion.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll lose on Commissioner Samuelin. You want to be heard?
No, I'm supportive as well. We made a commitment. We need to stand by it. I strongly think we should look for another source. As we do that final sourcing, I just want to make sure we're engaged in terms of what services that we are receiving for the funding we're providing, and that's we've been very consistent about that, but we absolutely need to find the money given the commitment we made.
Okay. Anyone else want to be heard? Okay, it's been moved and seconded. This is a voice vote, right? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Show it done unanimously. Thank you, Ron. All right.
Very
just for a second.
By the way, I almost was going to say We did it so quickly to, but go ahead.
Almost. First of all, thank you on behalf of not only the Homeless Trust and the Domestic Violence Oversight Board, but for all of the individuals whose lives you will have positively impacted by this. We intend to show you with outcome and performance numbers what this means, and we are going to take this money, we're going to add it to what Surfside and Bal Harbour have put on the table, we are going to use it and leverage additional dollars so that we can have a robust, more robust piece, if you will, on the Homeless Trust side. On the Domestic Violence Oversight Board side, it will simply be plowed back into those services. And then lastly, I simply want to pass around to each of you, there's an envelope for each of you. Next week is Homeless Awareness Day. We kick off at the Greater Miami Chamber with a luncheon update on Wednesday at noon. We have a reception on Wednesday night with the restaurateurs that have been such a part of what has occurred to thank folks. And then Thursday all day is Homeless Awareness Day throughout the community. Our Homeless Awareness Day is the largest one in the United States, and I simply would like to invite each of you to be a part of it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I think the point that was clarified, because the memo may have been unclear, is I think when you all allocated the $250, I believe half was for the homeless issues and half was for the domestic violence issues.
Right. Okay. Listen, thank you.
If I could ask you to repeat it for the Domestic Violence Oversight Board's purposes.
Good evening, Commissioners, Mr. Mayor. I'm Liz Regalado. I staff the Domestic Violence Oversight Board. And today met, and it wanted me to come here and thank you for acknowledging the need to support domestic violence services and also request that it's hopeful that you will find alternative source of funding. And it also requests respectfully that you allocate the funds at half to go for domestic violence services to be overseen by the Domestic Violence Oversight Board, which now sits at the Office of Community Advocacy with the County Commission, and half of it to go to the Homeless Trust for homeless services.
Yeah, I think we were doing that.
Okay. Thank you all for coming. And listen, we appreciate the work you all are doing. You don't really have to thank us. It's not our money. It's our residents' money.
thank them.
Just so everybody knows, thank our residents. Okay. R9B.
R9B is update on Miami City Ballet funding request requested by Commissioner Malakoff.
Okay, Jimmy, are you going to talk about this?
Matt? I've had the discussions with the ballet.
And by the way, just so everybody knows, this was an awards and presentation meeting that got a whole lot of non-awards and presentation stuff on it. I don't mean to have people go quickly, but I do feel like we can't have a constant government, and so if you feel like I put you on a shot clock. When you come up here, it's because we probably shouldn't be doing business to begin with. We're supposed to be honoring our residents at this meeting, and that's what the purpose of it's for. But there are some things that had to be done and just some things, I guess, people really wanted to do. But hopefully these awards and presentation meetings will be about awards and presentations only.
Mr. Mayor, remember, the context of this was that during the budget process,
yes.
Ballet had come in and asking for, I think, approximately $500,000. I think the commission directed us to sit down with them and figure out what funding we could find and what particular programming, public benefit. And I think Matt has done that working with the ballet, and we'll present a report.
Okay, great. Hi, everyone. Matt Kenny, Director of Tourism and Culture. So following the commission meetings where the ballet came out to speak, we sat down with them to really talk about what their ask was and kind of get it down a little bit to a more palatable dollar amount to make sure that the community benefits were up to the level that we kind of wanted to see. This is absolutely one-time funding for this year, and we've asked them to come back next year if they want to be part of the budget process and do it that way. So in a nutshell, basically we sat down, we picked out, went through their entire program and chose the things that we felt were going to hit on three different pillars. One is public performance of their professional company, one is community outreach, and the other is education. So the three things that we've identified funding for is their ballet bus program, which is a great program where they pick up underprivileged youth and do homework with them with mentors on the bus, bring them to the ballet, teach them how to dance. They do a 10-year investment in these students. The second one, I can go into further detail, let me know, but I'll do it quickly for now. The second one is a public performance at the Colony Theater, And then the third one is a Lincoln Road presentation where they will do multiple kind of community classes where they'd be teaching people how to do ballet, kind of what you would see a yoga or a boot camp class kind of do. So the total amount for that equals, the dollar amount exactly is about $199,886 is where we got them to. So open that up for any discussion.
Okay.
Can I say something?
Sure.
I had spoken with the folks from the ballet and when they first made the larger request and explained that the Miami City Ballet started on Lincoln Road when we could see the ballerinas practicing at the bar and the students. But once they moved here to the area that they're in now, we sort of lost the connection to Miami Beach. And what I felt we wanted, was more connection to Miami Beach for the Miami City Ballet. And they really are delivering it. I already received an invitation. There's an event happening at the Colony Theater, November 23rd and November 24th, where they're actually performing three different ballets there.
Yep.
And I think it's wonderful because it's something that it's easy to get to for all of us who live in Miami Beach, plus the ballet bus with helping all
great
the kids,
program.
Et cetera. So they really did do what I had requested specifically for Miami Beach.
And let me just add, and first of all, thank you all. There has been a sort of separation. I remember when you all started here, and to now, it's over the course of decades, we housed you, and we kept you here, and we supported you, but we really didn't have the same connection when you were a struggling place where you couldn't go anywhere but H&M store, because that was where the Lincoln Theater was and things like that. I think this is a good first step because, you know, the difference in our city today is that when you all started in our city, we had aspirations to be a cultural destination. And you, in fact, probably were one of the biggest reasons we have become one. Now I think we are one, and we want to grow that. And so I think this is a great first step. But I also expect that you're going to find that we're a city willing to pay for and to support in every way, not just with money, but in a lot of other resources, to make sure you love being in Miami Beach and that our residents love having you here. And those kinds of connections with our residents and our schools are what's going to, I think, really help. So we're looking forward to this being the first step in a very, I don't want to say a profitable journey for both of us, because that sounds like it's financial. But it is going to be that kind. I think we have amazing connections with one another and history, and I want that to grow in every possible way. And Matt, thank you for your work, and thank you for your work. So with that, is this a report, or are we accepting a recommendation?
I move the item.
I think some moved. Is there a second?
I want to know, Jimmy, I want to make sure we get the homeless funding first before okaying this, because this is going to have to come out of – this wasn't in the budget, right?
Correct.
Yeah,
and don't worry. We'll accommodate both. We'll take care of the homeless. I promise you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to support this unless I'm assured that the homeless will go first.
They'll go first, and I think we'll still have the ability to also do the ballet, particularly since we're treating it this year as a one-timer, and then we'll figure out about funding next year. Okay. Well, recurring.
So I'll second it as amended, contingent on that.
Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you. If it hasn't been seconded, I'll second it, because I am supporting it today.
You can third it.
I'll third it. I agree with everything that you said. We have a commitment to really branding our community as an arts community. We're all working towards that every day, supporting arts, whether it's visual arts, performing arts, dance arts, as it is in this particular case. And even though the request came later than I would have liked, and I know that you're going to work diligently to get in your request for next year much sooner, I think it's a very valuable organization, and I think the specific programs that you've tied it to really tie it into what we're looking for in Miami Beach and keeping this here in our city and growing your event and exposing our residents and students to ballet arts. So I'm happy to support this today.
All right. We're fully in support. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Like, sign nay. Show it approved. Thank you all. Well said. Okay. We're going to go back. I think we can go back.
PA3,
and we're back to what this meeting is about, which is recognizing our people, our residents, and our city is really spectacular, believe it or not because of your mayor and commissioner, okay, But because we have wonderful residents who will call this a home and want to grow it and invest in it and invest their time, invest their money, invest their sweat equity. And so let me tell you.
PA7.
You need to call it, or can I just keep going? Thank you. So what happened on this particular one is I don't do a whole lot of proclamations. I sign everything, so I think the commissioners really are best at that, and they do a wonderful job of recognizing people. One of my commissioners wanted to recognize one of our residents for really her work in education. And I thought, well, you know, I think we should do something special because on a regular basis, there are people in our community who step up and just do exceptional things over and over again, nonstop, for as long as anybody can remember. And I wanted to create especially in the area of public education. So I wanted to create an award that we give annually in public education. So I'd like, is Vanna White here? There we go. So what we're going to do this year is we're going to announce the beginning of an award. And I actually asked Alberto if he was all right, our superintendent, to name it after him, the Alberto Carballo Education Advocate Award. We're going to give it every single year to somebody who, I guess whoever the mayor is, really thinks has done something spectacular. And when Commissioner Alemán said she wanted to honor Tiva Lesser, I said, well, that's great, but let's create this thing. We're going to put this in the lobby on the wall, and we're also going to give Tiva her own little plaque for at home, which Vanna White is going to show in a moment. And we really want you to know, I'm going to let Commissioner Alemán give you really the full money on this, but I just wanted to say I don't really mean that, by the way. What you've done to really invest in our schools, and I know, by the way, a lot of you that are here, I know you all work. I mean, I watch our schools, and I watch with a certain group gets involved, and they put their hands on it, and they get upset, or they get happy, or they get enthusiastic. The entire thing raises up. And you can see that in North Beach. You can see that throughout our elementary schools, in Treasure Island. You can see that in Biscayne. You can see that in South Point. You can see that at Fisher. You can see that at Nautilus, and you've certainly seen it at Beach High. And I think you're a Triple Crown winner in that you've been to. Has it been the PTA of every one of them?
Yeah.
So, John Alemán, give us a little bit of rendition of what Tiva Lesser has won.
I certainly will. I'm going to read the proclamation. I think it's important. And yes, please, Tiva Lesser, please come up to the podium. And because it's Tiva Day. So this proclamation is from the City of Miami Beach, and it says, whereas Tiva Lesser dedicated her efforts to improving our children's access to better elementary education, as North Beach Elementary Parent Teacher Association President, Vice President of Fundraising, Vice President of the Store Fundraising, and Friends of North Beach Vice President. And whereas Tiva Lesser went on to improve the access to the middle school education for our community as Miami Beach Nautilus Middle School Parent Teacher Student Association President and Vice President of Fundraising. And whereas Tiva Lesser continued her efforts for better education at the secondary level as Miami Beach Senior High School PTSA President and Vice President of Advocacy. And whereas Tiva Lesser has also selflessly dedicated her time and energy to our city's development, safety, and education by acting as the chair of the Miami Beach Quality Education Committee, by becoming a member of the Miami-Dade County Public Schools Family and Community Involvement Advisory Committee, as well as its Budget Advisory Subcommittee, by participating in the city's Beautification Committee, as well as its Fine Arts Committee, and lastly, its Police Advisory Committee. I think we also missed the Commission for Women, which you also served on. Yeah, and whereas Tiva Lesser exemplifies citizenship, advocacy, and commitment to all things Miami Beach through her service, positive attitude, and unique dedication to our children and community. Now, therefore, do we, as Mayor and Commissioners of the City of Miami Beach, hereby proclaim October 30th, 2019, as Tiva Lesser Day.
Thank you.
So, and I think just like on a point of personal privilege, Tiva is very much largely to blame for me sitting up here, I think, because although she was not the one to originally recruit me into the PTA at North Beach Elementary, that was Mr. Roger Bauman, she certainly was the one, as she always does. Tiva is such a warm and loving person. She brings everybody in. I don't care what language you speak, what your background is. Tiva brings everyone in and gets everyone really excited about working together. And any PTA president knows it's not about what you do, it's how you build, you bring your whole board. And there's so many people in the audience tonight. And I know when we do photos, you'll probably want to do one with the family, but then another one with all of your teammates and,
yes,
and coworkers
for sure.
who I see here to support you tonight. But you were definitely an inspiration to me, and it was Tiva Lesser and I sitting in those chairs here in chambers trying to advocate for education items that caused me to ever have a sparkle of interest in sitting
And then
up
I
here.
Said to her, you should run for commissioner.
Yes, you did. And I want to welcome your children. She has three wonderful boys that are here, Jack, Max, and Ryan. Her daughter, Nicole, is studying abroad in Spain. She's in college. So she's a wonderful mother of four. Her husband, Lior, is here. They have a beautiful family, and I'm proud to call her my friend. And I'm very proud that you are the original inaugural recipient of the award that Mayor Gelber created in conjunction with Superintendent Alberto Carvalho, the Alberto M. Carvalho Education Advocate Award. This one's for you, and the other one hangs at City Hall.
I love it. Thank you so much. I just wanted to just thank everybody up there on the dais, and I've worked with probably all of you at some point to advocate for the school, and I know you've all been so supportive for education, so thank you so much from Jimmy to all the commissioners, and of course Mayor Gelber, especially with your new STEAM initiative. It's just really thank you so much. I want to thank my husband. I feel like I'm doing like an Oscar, you know, thank you or something, but because he's the one who's been basically cool with me doing all this volunteering, because it does take up a lot of time, and there's always people, you know, trying to get someone else, you know, like fighting with other people. So there's, I'm usually the mediator, and so, you know, he hears it all. So, and I want to thank my board, of course, you know, all of my boards for all the years, because, I mean, these are all my friends now, which I'm so thankful that I'm able to volunteer and, you know, spend time doing that, and I don't have to work and get paid to work. I get paid out of the love that I get for all that we do for the school. So thank you again. Love you, John. John was the one who got me to, you know, jump into becoming PTA president of North Beach after she was. So she's like, you can do it. Just come and do it after me. And then I just went on from there. So it's all your fault, John.
We really do want to thank you. And also we want to thank all the squad supporters that are here. Raise your, all your friends. Thank you all for all you do. So.
Do A?
Yep.
R5A is an ordinance of the mayor and city commission of the city of Miami Beach, Florida, amending the code of the City of Miami Beach, subpart B, entitled Land Development Regulations by amending Chapter 142 of the code, entitled Zoning Districts and Regulations, Article 2, entitled District Regulations, Division 3, entitled Residential Multifamily Districts, Subdivision 4, entitled RM2 Residential Multifamily Medium Intensity, Section 142-213, entitled Conditional Uses, to expand conditional uses to include certain types of non-medical office and personal service uses for bayfront apartment buildings in the West Avenue Overlay District, and providing for repeal or codification, severability, and effective date. This is a second reading public hearing. The item requires a 5-7 vote.
Okay. Tom, do you want to this is second reading. It's already passed first. Why don't you give us a quick understanding so everybody knows when I open up the public hearing what we're talking about.
Sure. This would impact RM2 apartment buildings that face bayfront properties. Essentially, it's a limited area of apartment buildings that are located between roughly Lincoln Terrace, 16th Street, and Day Boulevard Canal. From a practical standpoint, it's likely only going to affect the Capri, and it would allow a slight expansion of allowable accessory uses within apartment buildings at the first level, subject to conditional use approval. The expansion would specifically include non-medical offices and personal service establishments. This was endorsed by the Planning Board, by the Land Use Committee, and the administration is recommending adoption. It was approved at first reading on October 16th with no changes.
I'm opening up the public hearing. Anybody want to be heard? Closing the public hearing.
Move the item.
Item's been moved. Is your second? Let's call the roll.
Commissioner Samulin.
Yes.
Vice Mayor Arriola.
Yes.
Commissioner Steinberg.
Yes.
Commissioner Alamon.
Yes.
Commissioner Malikoff.
Yes.
Commissioner Gongora.
Yes.
Mayor Gelber.
Yes.
Motion carries. The item is approved.
Okay, let's go to B, R5B.
R5B is an ordinance of the Mayor and City Commission of the City of Miami Beach, Florida, amending the Land Development Regulations of the Code of the City of Miami Beach by amending Chapter 138, entitled Signs, Article 1, in general, at Section 138-9, entitled Yard Requirements, to clarify sign requirements, Article 2, entitled Design Standard, Windows, Awning, Wall, Projection, and Detached Monument Signs, at Section 138-16, entitled Wall Signs, to modify location requirements and incorporate and modify supplemental standards for wall signs by amending Section 138-18, entitled Projecting Signs, to modify the requirements for projecting signs by amending Section 138-19, entitled Detached Signs, to modify setback requirements for detached signs, and by amending Section 138-22, entitled Supplemental Standards, to modify supplemental standards by amending Article 3, entitled Specific District Sign Regulations, Division 1, entitled Special Sign Regulations at Section 138-58, entitled Vertical Retail Center Signs, to modify requirements for signage at vertical retail centers by amending the aforestated sections to address the frequency of applications for commonly sought variances related to signage, and providing for repeal or severability codification and effective date. This is a second reading public hearing. The item requires a 5-7 vote.
Tom, over the din of the squad outside celebrating, why don't you tell us what this does?
This is a second reading of an ordinance that makes some modifications to Chapter 138 pertaining to building signage to remove what have been common variances over the last few years. It was approved at first reading with no changes, and the administration is recommending adoption.
That objection, I'm opening the public hearing. Anybody want to be heard on this matter? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing.
Move the item.
Item's been moved. Hello?
Second.
Item's been seconded. Let's call the roll.
Vice Mayor Arriola.
Yes.
Commissioner Malikoff.
Yes.
Commissioner Samulin.
Yes.
Commissioner Gongora.
Yes.
Commissioner Alamon.
Yes.
Commissioner Steinberg.
Yes.
Mayor Gelber.
Yes.
Motion carries. The item is approved.
Let's go to R5C.
R5C is an ordinance of the Mayor and City Commission of the City of Miami Beach, Florida, amending the Land Development Regulations of the Code of the City of Miami Beach by amending Chapter 142, entitled Zoning Districts and Regulations, Article 2, entitled District Regulations, Division 3, entitled Residential Multifamily Districts, Subdivision 2, entitled RM1 Residential Multifamily Low Intensity, as Sections 142-155 and 142-156. Subdivision 4, entitled RM2 Residential Multifamily Medium Intensity, at Sections 142-217 and 142-218. And Subdivision 5, entitled RM3 Residential Multifamily High Intensity, at Section 142-246 and 142-247. To modify setback and unit size requirements for rooftop additions to contributing structures in historic districts and individually designated historic buildings. Division 4, entitled CD1 Commercial Low Intensity District, at Sections 142-276 and 142-277. Division 5, entitled CD 2 commercial medium intensity district at sections 142.306 and 142.307, and Division 6 entitled CD3 commercial high intensity district at sections 142-337 and 142-338. To modify setback and unit size requirements for residential uses and rooftop additions to contributing structures in historic districts and individually designated historic buildings, and to modify the maximum allowable height for all uses, Division 13, entitled MXE Mixed-Use Entertainment District, at Section 142-545, to modify the unit size requirements for new hotel units for rooftop additions to contributing structures in historic districts and individually designated historic buildings, and to modify the maximum allowable height for all uses, providing for repeal or severability codification and effective date. This is a second reading public hearing. The item requires a 5/7 vote.
Okay. You want to cue it up again?
Sure. I'll be very brief. There may be some public comment on this one. This is one of the common variance ordinances, and it pertains to rooftop additions, setbacks, and room sizes, primarily within commercial zoning districts and the MXE district. At the last meeting, the primary point of discussion was the recommendation of the Historic Preservation Board to remove the ability of the Historic Preservation Board to be able to allow up to a 5-foot increase in overall height for new construction if the first floor of the building has been adjusted to have additional floor-to-ceiling height to accommodate the future raising of streets and sidewalks. That is currently not in the ordinance. It's in the draft ordinance. It was included in the first reading approval. The HPB, that was the one section of the code that they did object to, and they recommended that that be stricken, but the commission left it in for first reading. The administration recommended that it be left in, and we recommended that it be left in for adoption.
Why did you all recommend that, just so we know?
Because we believe that the Historic Preservation Board should have the flexibility on a case-by-case basis to allow 5 feet of additional height in the event that that additional 5 feet of height is needed to address potential street and sidewalk raising at the first level of the structure in the future. Also, it is discretionary, so if the HPB concludes that the extra 5 feet or not that much is warranted, they can simply not approve
deny it.
Okay, I'm going to open up the public hearing. I see a young gentleman.
Yes, hi, Mayor, with a great first name. Mayor Galver, Daniel Serraldo, Miami Design Preservation League. So the ordinance itself has a lot of really good qualities to it. I think it will streamline a lot of the requests for variances that are always granted. But I was at the HPB at the time it was discussed, and, you know, there's a couple things. This does not impact base flood elevation and freeboard, which currently, you know, you're allowed to do base flood plus up to 5 feet. So, like in my neighborhood, I think you could go up to plus 14 feet. So to add a new kind of waiver process to the HP board, it's a lot because the HP board already is dealing with a ton of, you know, questions about the compatibility, the sensitivity. And I believe it was John Seward, the architect, who mentioned that, you know, height isn't really, resiliency is one thing, but just the height itself isn't necessarily the answer. There are ways to do the design that can be resilient without this 5 feet height waiver. I just think it would just add another layer of waiver requests, and so I kind of understand the HP board saying, you know, thank you, but no thank you. So I would suggest if you would all consider moving the rest of it. I know MBU is against the whole thing, but I think, you know, the rest of it sounds good, but this height waiver, maybe let's see how it's going at DRB, because I know they already have it, but with HPB, there might be other creative ways without adding this new waiver process. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else want to be heard? Okay, I'm going to, without objection, close the public hearing. Members?
Move the item.
Aye,
I second it.
Aye, and seconded. If without discussion, we can go ahead and call the roll.
Commissioner Malikoff.
Yes.
Commissioner Gongora.
No.
Commissioner Steinberg.
Yes.
Vice Mayor Ariola.
Yes.
Commissioner Samuelin.
Yes.
Commissioner Aleman.
Yes.
Mayor Gelber.
Yes.
Motion carries. The item is approved.
R5D.
R5D is an ordinance of the Mayor and City Commission of the City of Miami Beach, amending the land development regulations of the Code of the City of Miami Beach by amending Chapter 130 entitled Off-Street Parking, Article 3 entitled Design Standards, to Section 130-64 entitled Drives, to modify driveway requirements for low-scale multifamily buildings by amending Chapter 142, entitled Zoning Districts and Regulations, Article 2, entitled District Regulations, Division 2, entitled RS1, RS2, RS3, RS4, single-family residential districts at Sections 142, 106, entitled Setback Requirements for Single-Family Detached Dwellings, to incorporate and modify requirements for allowable encroachments and swimming pools related to single-family homes currently located in Sections 142-1132 and 142-1133 by amending Division 21, entitled Town Center Central Core TCC District, at Section 142-744, entitled Setbacks and Encroachments, at Sections 142-745, entitled Street Frontage Design and Operation Requirements, to clarify and revise requirements for habitable encroachments, shade structure setbacks, and off-street loading, and by amending Article 4, entitled Supplementary District Regulations, Division 4, entitled Supplementary Yard Regulations, at Section 142-1132, entitled Allowable Encroachments Within Required Yards, to remove requirements for single-family districts and modify requirements for allowable encroachments in required yards, and at Section 142-1133, entitled Swimming Pools, to remove requirements for swimming pools in single-family districts and amend requirements for swimming pools in other districts, and providing for repeal or severability codification and effective date. This is a second reading public hearing. The item requires a 5-7 vote.
Okay, I'll be brief. This was approved at first reading on October 16, 2019. The two changes that were made by the City Commission were as follows. One was an amendment to the allowable encroachments for mechanical structures, and the Commission elected to remove the proposal to allow these encroachments in the RPS2, RM2, and RM3 districts. Those have been removed, and they are currently permitted in the TH and RM1 districts, and that remained. Section 142-106 pertaining to allowable encroachments in single-family districts, the pool and deck allowance projection requirements for pre-42 architecturally significant single-family homes have been extended to individually designated historic districts and contributing single-family homes in local historic districts as recommended by the HPB.
Okay, without objection, I'm going to open up the public hearing. Anybody want to be heard?
I do.
I'll get to you. anybody from the public want to be heard? Without objection, we'll close the public hearing. Commissioner Malikoff.
I saw nobody from the public coming, so I figured I'm next to public. I'm glad that the mechanical equipment ordinance was removed from this ordinance for various reasons, which I mentioned previously. But I'm still not comfortable with the swimming pools or the fences. The swimming pools, the problem is in the pre-1942 architecturally significant homes and homes that are designated as historic. They affect where the pools are, and the setbacks that are allowed are often encroach upon a neighbor. I served for many years on the Board of Adjustment, and there were often swimming pools that were put into a side yard or a front yard because there wasn't enough space in the back, and it then did infringe upon the privacy of the neighbor. And I think that swimming pools should be removed from this. And the last part was the fences. The landscaping is fine, the height is fine, but the finished side of a fence to face neighbors, this states that if the neighbor has their own fence or landscaping and they're comfortable having an unfinished side facing their property, that there could be an exception as the county allows it with a signed affidavit from a neighbor. It's very awkward if your neighbor, your next door neighbor, is putting up a fence and you really don't like it and you don't like the unfinished side facing you because you have landscaping but you have in the future plans to do something else. It's very awkward to tell a neighbor, no, I don't want to sign the affidavit. I think it causes bad neighborhood feelings. So I would suggest that we remove the fence and the swimming pool, and then I would support it. If it goes forward as it stands now, I can't support it.
Tom, how material are those edits? Does that?
Well, in the pre-42, that was in there from the beginning, and the Historic Preservation Board recommendation would only extend it to a limited number of homes. Now, the reason we think it's important for pre-42 and other single-family homes is that because it's not new construction, they don't have the ability to meet the setback requirements quite as easily as new construction. So oftentimes when you're renovating a pre-42 home or a historic home, having that flexibility can help you add that amenity. With regard to the fencing, we've tried to draft this in a way where it would only apply to those situations where a neighbor already has either a very tall hedge or an existing fence, because the issue that we've run into is that in order to have both sides finished, they would literally have to construct the fence and then have the more expensive finished side face a neighbor where nobody sees it. In the past, they've actually come to us with the affidavit saying, we've talked to our neighbor, the neighbor has no problem with the unfinished side being next to them. And so we wanted to provide that level of flexibility in those instances where you just will never see that unfinished side of the fence from the neighbor because of either landscaping or fencing.
I have a question.
Question?
Jimmy, actually, I don't want to name who these residents were, but weren't we dealing with an issue with a dispute about a fence recently, in like the last year, about a neighbor home?
This was in the Bayshore area, I think?
No, mm-hmm. In the Mid-Beach area.
I think that had to do with the location.
Of the fence?
Yes.
And that this wouldn't... Oh.
No, that was a dispute about a property line and where the fence was located.
Okay, I thought there was an encroachment issue.
That it was, but an encroachment on their property. So the neighbors, there was a dispute between the two neighbors as to where the property line was, and one neighbor actually had to move the fence over to not be on that neighbor's property line.
Okay.
Okay, anyone else?
Oh.
Well, we got to do something, so let's... Someone going to move the item or amend it?
Commissioner Malakoff has served longer on more boards than anyone I've ever heard of. And so I think we're doing a lot of good work with the common variance requests that staff has analyzed. If Commissioner Malakoff, based on her experience, feels we should rein that part in a little bit, I'm perfectly prepared to go along with her recommendation.
Because how do you feel about that?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sensitive to Commissioner Malakoff's expertise in this area, but I want to back staff when they come with these recommendations and not do it on the fly from here.
You like it as is, or?
We like it as is. I mean, we certainly fully respect Commissioner Malakoff's opinion on this. I've discussed this with her. But, yeah, a lot of thought has gone into this. They were all very, very carefully and narrowly crafted to address what have been common variances, and in the case of the fences, what have been situations that have arisen after the fact. And we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where when two neighbors are completely okay with it, there's a code section that requires somebody to rip down a fence and then just to put up a finished sign that nobody will ever see.
I'm prepared to follow staff with the notion that Commissioner Malakoff, you have been doing quite a bit, and you have one of the best on-base percentages in this in commission history. You're definitely going in the Hall of Fame.
One minute.
Sure.
How about if we forget about the fences and leave that in as a variance and just take out the swimming pools? Because I know it's caused problems in the past, and the variances have not always been approved. This way they'd get approved automatically.
The pools was the thing I was the most sensitive to, because if we follow Commissioner Malakoff's suggestion, would some people actually, just because of size limitations, lose the ability to have a pool at their home?
They wouldn't lose the ability to have a pool, but because of size limitations, they would have to go to either the DRB or the HPB to get that variance to get the pool. And then sometimes if a neighbor has an issue, they could oppose it just for the sake of opposing it. And so we limited it to pre-42 and historic homes because those are the ones where we wanted to provide some incentive for retaining and restoring those homes.
Right.
And this gave them a little bit more of an incentive to do that.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, if somebody buys a pre-1942 home and wants to put a pool in there, then presumably they're keeping the home as is.
Correct.
Largely. That's my concern with this, is that if no one's installed a pool in almost 100 years and then somebody buys a home and wants to install the pool, the assumption there is they're keeping the home. If we create a situation where it's a hassle to do a pool and renovations, they may say, the heck with it, just knock the house down and start over. So I want to keep the pool in there.
Okay. We're going to move it as is?
I'll move it as is.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, let's call the roll.
Vice Mayor Areola, as is.
Yes.
Commissioner Steinberg. Commissioner Malakoff?
No.
Commissioner Samulin?
Yes.
Commissioner Alamon?
Yes.
Commissioner Gongora?
Yes.
Mayor Gelber?
Yes.
Motion is approved. The item is approved.
All love to Commissioner Malakoff.
Commissioner Malakoff does bring up a good point, because before the variance used to only go in front of the BOA. They no longer do that. Now they go through a much more, I think, when the BOA just handled variances, it was almost in some ways cleaner because it was just there for that purpose. Now they have to go to either DRB or HPB, which is a packed agenda and a much more rigorous situation. So that's something we may want to look at in the future.
Okay, let's go to R5F.
E,
right?
Nope, F.
You want F? Okay.
Mr. Mayor, we want to take up R7E, which is the contract first, and then do the ordinance.
Okay, R7E, then R. You got it, right?
Okay, R7.
We're going to get our CWA friends out of here.
Okay.
Good idea.
R7E, ratified 3-year labor agreement with CWA, October 1st, 2018 to September 30th, 2021. R7E.
I'll move it. To Rezo, right? We all read it.
Rezo.
Right.
And seconded by Commissioner Gongora.
And seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Like, sign, nay. Thank you very much.
We're brilliant.
Thank you.
Well, and now?
Now we've got to do the ordinance.
Now we're going to do R5F. R5F is an ordinance of the Mayor and City Commission of the City of Miami Beach, Florida, amending the ordinance number 789, the classified employee salary ordinance of the City of Miami Beach, Florida, as follows, providing for the classifications in Group 4, presented by the Communications Workers of America, CWA Local 3178, in accordance with the collective bargaining agreement, effective upon ratification of this agreement. This will be an increase in pay grade for the following classifications: Lifeguard 1 from age 52 to age 54, Lifeguard 2 from age 56 to age 58, Lifeguard Lieutenant from age 58 to age 60, Parking Enforcement Officer 1 from age 22 to age 24, Parking Dispatcher from age 24 to age 25. Effective the first full pay period ending in October 2018, there should be an across-the-board cost of living adjustment, COLA, of 1%, and the minimum and maximum of each pay range will also be increased by 1%. Effective the first full pay period ending in October 2019, there should be an across-the-board cost of living adjustment, COLA, of 1%, and the maximum and the minimum and maximum of each pay range will also be increased by 1%. Effective the first full pay period ending in October 2020, there should be an across-the-board cost of living adjustment, COLA, of 1%, and the minimum and maximum of each pay range will also be increased by 1%. In the event the city's general fund revenues increase by 11% or more in June 2020, there should be an across-the-board cost of living adjustment, COLA, of 2% instead of the 1% for October 2020, repealing all ordinances in conflict, providing for severability and effective date and codification. This is a first reading, R5F.
Okay. Eisen moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Call the roll.
Commissioner Gongora?
Yes.
Commissioner Malakoff?
Yes.
Commissioner Steinberg?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Areola?
Yes.
Commissioner Alamon?
Yes.
Commissioner Samulin?
Yes.
Mayor Gelber?
Yes.
Motion passes. Second reading, public hearing is December 11th.
Thank you.
Mayor, Commissioner, if I could just make a comment. Our friends here at CWA, the negotiations this time went much better than last time. We had 3 meetings, and we got a great contract. Monique and her team, Ozzie Garcia, fantastic job. So.
Well, I passed it fast in the same way in the NFL when you you don't want there to be a review of the play. You jump up to the line and you snap the ball. So it's done. Thank you all.
But you're right to bring that up, and we really do appreciate the collaborative negotiations and settlements. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you to Jimmy.
Posture.
I know. Great leadership, and we work very well with
leadership.
Them.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioner, also just as my news, this week we also completed negotiations with AFSCME. A handshake agreement. We'll be bringing that to you in December.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm going to just try to get him out of here. Let's bring up. What's the guy's name? R7G. That's you,
R7G.
Santorino, that's you.
R7G, execute employment agreement with Inspector General Joseph Santorino.
Okay, it's in the. Has everybody looked at it? All we got to do is approve the agreement, right? Any questions? I think you're being paid equal to our clerk. Is that about right? I think that's about right.
Yes, there's a term sheet. The range, the annual salary that Mr. Santorino is asking for, which is 210, is within the mid range of what was posted. So it's not. He didn't ask for the maximum. It's a 4-year term, as you all know, and per statute, it also includes
what the other constitutional officers get, which is a car allowance, a cell phone allowance, and contributions to A457 and 401. Mr. Santorino, like us, is also subject to an annual evaluation by the City Commission.
Okay. If there are no other questions?
As a courtesy, we also sent this contract to the Chair of the Finance Committee for his review.
Thank you, Commissioner Ariola. Vice Mayor Ariola. Okay. Let's get somebody moving it.
I'll second it.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Like sign nay.
I was going to ask a question, but I'm voting for it.
Go.
It was just asking, is the vehicle allowance and the cell phone allowance, is this what every higher level administration member at the city receives?
Yes. As of it was just recently updated. Okay. This is what the constitutional officers receive.
The charter officers.
Yeah, the charter officers. I call the charter the constitution.
I second it.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Like, sign, nay. Thank you all. Show it passed unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Santorino. Okay, we're going to jump to finish the 509 item. Then we're going to, I assume anyone who wants to talk about Palm Hibiscus is here. We'll get to you next. But let's go ahead and finish R5E.
R5E is an ordinance of the Mayor and City Commission of the City of Miami Beach, Florida, amending the Code of the City of Miami Beach by amending Chapter 6, entitled Alcoholic Beverage, Article 1, entitled In General, at Section 6-4. Entitled Location and Use Restrictions to Establish Cultural Speciality Districts, provide that there shall be no distance separation requirements in such districts between alcoholic beverage establishments, also operating as restaurants with full kitchens and educational facilities and places of worship, and to establish operating conditions, and at Section 6-6, entitled Minimum Seats and Hotel Room Requirements to reduce the number of seats required for alcoholic beverage establishments, and providing for repeal or severability codification and effective date. This is a second reading public hearing.
All right.
Okay. This was also approved at first reading with no changes. The only point of discussion at first reading was whether or not to include the recommendation of the 41st Street Committee, which was to limit the time that alcohol could be served without a variance if you were within 300 feet of a school or a house of worship to 5 p.m. or later. The administration is not recommending that be included. Just like the other two districts that are being established, we believe that along 41st Street, the same consideration for lunch distribution of alcohol should apply to dinner.
That's interesting.
So explain this.
Where do you get
any discussion?
I have a question.
Chicken kitchen.
What did 41st Street Committee want?
They wanted the variance to only apply for 5 p.m. on.
The no variance provision.
No variance, rather.
To only apply from 5 p.m. on.
And what was your rationale in not following that?
That the whole reason for creating this particular district was to foster a better environment for restaurants, because the 41st Street Committee is trying to better activate that street, and we didn't want to put that same limitation on a potential operator who wanted to have both lunch and dinner to force them to go through that variance procedure.
This is known as the Commissioner Steinberg and Commissioner Alamon liquid lunch.
You stole my question. You stole my question.
Hold on. No, clearly it's planning departments.
Okay, it's not there. It's Commissioner Gongora.
I move the item.
Hey, wait.
Commissioner, that isn't moved, but you can go ahead, Commissioner Steinberg.
No, listen.
And second.
Commissioner Malakoff. No, listen, this is not that big of a deal because I don't see that many more establishments, but I think there's a reason why that rule was there within the distance of a school for the daytime. I have no issue with it for town center. I think it's fine. Española Way, it is close to Feinberg Fisher, and I know that's one of the issues that were brought up in 41st Street. Literally, we have a committee that vets these things that are familiar with that corridor, and they said we prefer it after 5 p.m. Is there a way to almost carve out certain areas, or no?
It's difficult. The one thing I would tell you, though, is that this is specific to restaurants.
Right.
So it's not like somebody's going to do a nightclub or anything like that, or a bar, standalone bar. They would still have to go get the variance.
In all reasonableness, if somebody wants to have a glass of wine at lunch inside of a restaurant, it doesn't matter if there's a school 300
right.
feet away. It's irrelevant.
100%. That's not the issue. The issue is that today, if someone was to open up a new establishment, they would have to go for the variance if they're within a certain parameter feet of a school.
Correct.
This would then take that away in just those areas or everywhere in the city?
No, just these specific areas. Because these are the ones that are in closest proximity to a large number of houses of worship and schools, and so these are the ones that typically have to get the variances the most.
And those variances are always approved. I've never seen one not approved.
Okay. All right, let's call the vote.
Commissioner Samulin.
Yes.
Commissioner Alamon.
Yes.
Commissioner Gongora.
Yes.
Commissioner Steinberg.
Yes.
Commissioner Malikoff. Vice Mayor Ariola.
Yes.
Mayor Gelber.
Yes.
Motion carries. The item is approved.
Congratulations, Commissioner Steinberg, Commissioner Alamon.
Yes. You can so go have silly. That glass of wine.
All right.
Nice work, Tom Mooney, to you and the planning department.
Thank you.
It really took quite a, you know, they put a lot of work into identifying what were the variances that just always get approved and packaging them up. And so this is, you know, better for our businesses. It's better for staff. It's better for the boards. This is one of those ways that the city of Miami Beach is trying to make it easier to do business with the city. And so this is important legislation. Thank you for all of the analysis and hard work.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to R9D, discussion.
R9D is discuss Palm and Hibiscus Project, private property harmonization, requested by Commissioner Samulin. R9D.
Okay, Commissioner Samulin, I'll go to you, and then I will have Jimmy give us his rundown.
Okay, thank you, Mayor.
And then here you can sit down for a little bit. You're going to have to listen to us for a bit.
Okay.
And then we'll listen to you for a bit.
At our last commission meeting when we talked about the Palm Hibiscus Neighborhood Project, we talked about landscaping, and we mentioned we should get an update on this project. The situation we have, I would describe, is pretty urgent. Our project is frozen, and this is the last meeting we have for December, so we're not all doing business for a couple months here. I would say in my 2 years on the dais, this is probably one of the most concerning situations I've become aware of. This is an important, complex, and challenging project. Our team is working very hard, but we have some big problems. Our Sustainability Committee, Commissioner Alamon, Malikoff, and I have been providing oversight to neighborhood projects. And what we've learned has given us great concern. And specifically, when we heard there were issues with the county, I reached out to Commissioner Higgins and invited her to come, and she brought the director of Environmental Resource Management, DERM, Lee Hefty, to come. And on Wednesday, they gave us some information which I want to sort of summarize. Our project started in 2016. It's a $40 million project. Like we had in Indian Creek, we now have unpermitted work, and we are in violation. We've got up to 200 drains on public and private property. This action needs to stop. Our project was stopped by DERM on July 9th, and our residents are now suffering, and they don't know what's happening. DERM is awaiting our updated permit application, and also looming is our need to get individual property-by-property resident harmonization agreements. And given the situation we have, I would not describe that as trivial. This raises three questions, which I'm quite certain we're not going to wrestle to the ground tonight, but I do want to tee them up. One, how did this happen? Number two, how do we fix it? And number three, what changes do we need to make to our approach and our program, given the learnings we have? But tonight, I think we need to be a little more tactical. I think we need to hear our residents and have them understand that our entire commission is aware of the situation and that we are all going to act in urgency given what we have going on. Number two, I'd like to come out of here with some sense of an action plan. When will we get our engineering done? When will we submit to DERM? When is a reasonable expectation for DERM approval and completing the project? And number three, perhaps most importantly, what can we do to help? Whether it's policy or resources, what is it that this body can do? Because right now we're not in a great position.
Okay, so let's, first of all, thank you, Commissioner Samulin. I don't like awards meetings to become business meetings, but some things warrant looking at, and I don't think we are going to come to this isn't the time to, as you say, wrestle this. But obviously this issue's been percolating. I've seen, although I'm not in any of the committees as the mayor, I listen to them, and I'm aware of them, and tomorrow I'll be meeting with Mr. Hefty over at Durham. But why don't we get first Jimmy and Eric to talk a little bit about what happened so we can get a base for it. Pierre, I'm going to give you a little time afterwards. I appreciate you coming and letting us know you want to speak. I don't intend for any – we're really not going to take any action today because it's not appropriate to. It is appropriate to listen and to make sure that – because this has been happening in a couple different committees, so we all are, I think, aware of it. But because of sunshine laws, we can't just get together and talk about it. So this is not inappropriate. But I think after that, the staff has been – they'll go over it now – has been talking a lot with the county folks. So I'm not sure this thing is fully cooked, really, between us and the county, which needs to happen. But why don't we let Jimmy and Eric, who really know this issue pretty well, to talk a little bit about what's happening and what they're recommending. Eric or Jimmy?
I'll jump in first, and I'll let him close out. Honorable Mayor and Commissioners, Mr. Manager, thank you for giving me the opportunity to address the body. First thing I want to deal with, and I think is the most concerning of all of the items, is the characterization of the permit discussion. The fact of the matter is that we started construction in July of 2016 on the stormwater system on Palm and Hibiscus. We had a full permit from Durham in May of 2016 before we ever broke ground on the stormwater system. That stormwater system has gone through an evolution during the project, but I think to characterize it in the same breath as Indian Creek, where we bypassed a federal permitting process, as opposed to this particular instance where we should have gone through a permit modification. We are going to go through a permit modification process, and ultimately it is a judgment call of Durham as to when is the most appropriate time to go through that permit modification process, because a vast majority of all Class 2 permits go through a permit mod at their closeout. Very seldom does anybody install a stormwater project that is exactly the same as what was designed and permitted originally. I would like to invite the representative of the design builder up to talk briefly about what their thought process was in not going for that permit modification at the time that they began to do that work. But ultimately, I acknowledge it was a judgment call by Durham. I acknowledge that we're working through it with them, and we're going to continue to work through it with them. I'm happy to say that I've spent 6 hours at Durham over the last 2 days, and we've had some very positive discussions with their water control section, and I think that we're headed in a very good direction. We've got clear objectives that they've set forward for us, and we are going to be able to deliver them. I can tell you that we're committed to delivering the permit closeout documents that have been requested by Durham before Thanksgiving. So those are all positive things, but if Holly could come up and just talk a little bit about the permit modification process and what Lonzo and Wade Trim's thought process was on that, I'd appreciate it.
Mayor?
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, just real quick. Mayor? I mean, you're a very skilled politician, but you missed the layup here. Blame the previous mayor, and let's move on.
I don't do that. Who was the previous mayor? Okay, go ahead.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk with you. I will keep it brief. I just wanted to explain to you the process that we've gone through and the thought process in our permitting, and also make it clear, as Eric stated, that when the project started construction, we did have both systems, Palm and Hibiscus Islands, fully permitted. And as construction projects go through, there are usually some field adjustments that take place in stormwater systems, well, in any infrastructure system. And a lot of times those are addressed in as-built and the permits are closed out. And there's, just to be clear too, there's the permit modifications are actually unique to the west end of Palm Island. On the east end of Palm Island, the stormwater system was constructed and installed per the permitted documents. There were no modifications. On Hibiscus Island, there was a net difference of one 18-inch inlet drain in the right-of-way, and there was an area where we had obstruction and kind of shifted it around and added one. That's normally something that we would take care of during during permit closeout. The west end of Palm Island was a little bit different and a lot more challenging during construction, and there's really two different issues that we've been talking with Dermot about how to handle. Number one is there are 17 drains that are actually in the right-of-way around the west end of Palm Avenue. And when we initially designed the project, we had planned on clearing out more of the vegetation in the right-of-way, maybe even taking out some trees, and we were going to have basically a grassy swale where the stormwater would collect in the right-of-way and kind of traverse down the swale and be collected in some larger catch basins. Well, during construction, we realized that it was that there were some issues with removing those trees, and we decided that in order to preserve the trees, instead of having the water meander down the swale and go into one basin, we would have to put in some intermediate, or what we're calling our secondary drainage basins, through the right-of-way to capture that same water and transmit it to the larger drainage basin. So in retrospect, at that point, we should have gone to Durham and asked about permit modification process. And certainly if we were to do, on our next project, we will do that. But we thought it was something that could be handled during the as-building. And so we went forward with construction of capturing the same stormwater in the right-of-way that was already permitted through additional inlets. And then the other, the one that's at the 88 drains that you've been hearing about, these are temporary construction drains. There was one stall installed in the right-of-way in front of each property on North and South Coconut. And we put them there because we knew that with the smaller right-of-way in that area, during construction and before we had a chance to do the final harmonization and drainage, we wanted to make sure that we had that in place so that in case any flooding issues were to occur during construction, we would have a way to transmit that water away. The intent was that when the project was complete and before the stormwater system was placed into service, that those drains would be abandoned and the permanent drainage system would be in place at that time. And for that reason, we did not include those 88 temporary construction drains on the permit documents. We have resolution on how Durham wants to see those. We are going to add those as temporary drains into the permit modification. And we're adding the 17 drains that were added, we're adding those as part of the permanent permit modification. That piece was already done. We have enough treatment capacity to handle those areas. And we think that we have all the pieces in place to move toward resolution with all parties.
Okay. One thing I just want everybody to know from a commission organizational point of view is I had planned on calling a workshop on resiliency and really just these projects. Mm-hmm. All of them, not just Palm Hibiscus, soon into the next commission term. I didn't want to do it today because, frankly, not to diminish it, but at least two of you are not going to be here, and we're going to miss you, but there are going to be two new people that we're going to have to bring up to speed on this stuff, and I figured we'd wait till they come in. But very early on, we were going to have a very fulsome workshop on all of this. Mm-hmm. And just so everybody knows, I mean, Listen, Palm Hibiscus has been a bit of a nightmare, obviously. It's gone on too long. It's had all these issues. And the residents, and I'm sure we'll hear about it in a moment, have rightfully, been very, very frustrated. Unfortunately, we're going to learn lessons from that.
Absolutely.
But probably at the expense of a lot of disruption. So that's not great, but we've got to learn how to do this better. When I became mayor, I think a lot of, and my colleagues as well, it's not something I believe and they don't. But while we want to get it done, we want to get it done right. And so whatever we need to do, part of the reason we brought in ULI, part of the reason Columbia and Harvard are looking at it is we want to make sure that whatever we're doing is right. I don't want us to not do these important resiliency projects because, frankly, as we went through the last couple months with our heightened, with King Tide, one thing I did notice was that in areas where we've done our work, generally there's not the flooding that there has been, or at least certainly not even close. And the areas where there are flooding is areas where we haven't done anything yet. So obviously we have to do things, and I think it's important that the marketplace understand we're serious about it, but it is most important that we do it right. So, Jimmy, if there's anything you want to add before I bring Pierre up. Okay, go ahead, Eric.
So that's the bad news. The good news is we've gotten clear direction from DERM. We will have the engineering done by Thanksgiving. We've committed that we will have first meetings. At this point, we've met with a majority of the property owners that do have the eligibility for the harmonization and the private property drains, but we're committing to this body and to all of the citizens that we will have at least that first meeting with everybody by the first week in December. And we hope that we're going to put a full-time person actually on at the guardhouse at Palm to be able to answer questions that may come up while people are reviewing these harmonization agreements to be able to hopefully facilitate that process a little bit faster so that we can get to the finish line, which is where we all want to be. We are told that the landscaping contractor will be mobilizing next week to start landscaping work on the islands. And I think, you know, our commitment that we're going to have a full-time person out there until we resolve these harmonization issues is our commitment that we're not forgetting about the island. We haven't moved on to anything else. We're just trying to get there as fast as we possibly can.
Let me just add a couple things to Eric's comments. Number one, on the discussion of the drains, because I think part of the confusion to a degree has been, you know, this number of how many drains are illegal out there. And I think when the original, Eric mentioned the original permit. The original permit for the hibiscus portion actually provided for 125 permanent drains on hibiscus that were in fact installed. There was only one unpermitted drain, it was indicated. On Palm, there were 138 permitted drains in the plan that were installed. The ones that were not permitted, and I think she described them well, 17 that were done in an effort to not remove trees, and then the 88 temporary drains. So, in fact, the overwhelming majority of the drains out there were, in fact, in the original permit. The change, because I know for folks who weren't as part of the sustainability conversation, the change that occurred, and I think there may be one or two of you here who were there at the time, was that in 2017, over a year after the project had actually been let and work started, the commission, in response to concerns that the public had about that raising the road would cause flooding on their properties, adopted a policy indicating that all properties could connect to our system. That policy was subsequently modified late last year, and I think it finally codified in January this year, that it wouldn't be all properties, but that, in fact, staff would work with individual properties and on a case-by-case basis evaluate whether or not there were properties that could have a drain either on or in front of the property and or particularly on to help deal with the drainage. And so midway through this project, therefore, there were changes made in addition to, like, generators that were added. In the harmonization process, it was about the city staff during the course of this year worked with property owners, and ultimately we identified 98 properties, almost, I think, are all of them pretty much on Palm? Almost all of them on Palm, that would qualify for having an on-site property drain, private property drain, and then began the process of designing them, putting together the paperwork, and then sitting down with the property owners to go through it. I think one of the issues that emerged that, in fact, was actually positively resolved at last week's meeting was what paperwork would DERM require from the city or from the property owners. And at some point there had been talk about pulling a permit by the property owner. And last week, I think DERM agreed that the harmonization agreements with the easement in them would suffice for them to rely. And so I think at this point, with respect to each of the 98, what we will be submitting to them, the harmonization agreement when finally signed, and I believe we've met, I know David was telling me, we've met with 69 of the 98, and hopefully we'll have those signed up in the next couple weeks, and then the other 29 will come up. We can then, and the design work is done for those, and as soon as, and Durham, I think, is committed to try to turn them around in 2 weeks.
Correct.
So I think the notion there being that if, I think as Eric indicated, I think we can by December hopefully be in a position that we have submitted all that to Durham and hopefully get those permits issued. And my understanding is the harmonization work will probably take about 5 months to do, the 98 properties of harmonization work. And once that's done, we're literally, I think, a month away from then, maybe less, doing all the, what do we call that,
the final lift of asphalt.
Final lift of asphalt.
But if we have an opportunity to do final lift in some areas, we may do that ahead of whatever needs to be done in some of the other portions of the islands.
Now, one of the things that would be helpful, because I know Commissioner Hellman, you'd ask about, helpful is we need sort of a drop-dead date by which these agreements need to be signed, because, you know, at some point, if a property owner won't sign, then we have to just sort of move on and say, well, you're not getting a drain. And that's we don't want to be held up there. But so that would be helpful, you know, support on that front. I don't think we need, and we talked about, it's not a question of resources or funding at this point. We are going to put more personnel out there to really work with the neighbors and talk about the agreements and whatnot. And we'll certainly work, you know, Lanzo, we don't have to add money to their contract, but certainly if they can put additional crews out there to do the harmonization work, you know, we'll work with them on that as well. So I don't think there's additional resources needed. And I think, candidly, the conversations last week with Durham have helped. I believe that sort of maybe jump-started the process with some of the good news that, you know, over the last couple of days. So.
Okay, Pierre. And by the way, while you're coming up, to both Commissioner Samuel and Pierre, thank you for really, you know, the more times questions are asked, the more things happen because of it. And it shouldn't really happen always that way, but that's how sometimes things work. I'm meeting with Mr. Hefty tomorrow in large part because of the recent meetings. I know Eric spent the day over with Durham today. So there's a lot of movement on this. The reason I thought it was okay to bring it up at the meeting because I thought you'd want to say something. I know Commissioner Salmian did. But a lot's going on. A lot's going to go on. Maybe you've heard a little bit of that before, too. But I think we all are intent on. It's been a little nightmarish, I know. We're trying to get this thing home. So go ahead, though.
A few comments, if I may, Mayor, Commissioner, City Manager, our residents. Number one, we appreciate the time. My name is Pierre D'Agostini. I am the Executive Director for the Palm Hibiscus Island Homeowner Association. And you're right, Mr. Mayor. By having several of those conversations, we learn. And in the preliminary notes, I would like to say to you the two things I've learned, which are totally mind-boggling. First thing I learned is that in the presentation at the last meeting, which you allude to it, is that all of a sudden, on a $40 million project, all of a sudden the administration had what I heard one of the commissioners say, a ha-ha moment. What city manager is saying, oh, in 2017, we just realized that if we raise the road, the homeowners are going to have issue with inundation. So it's totally mind-boggling. And when I am always approached, I'm often approached by very knowledgeable, passionate people in the public. The knowledge is there. So the first question is, how could it have been a ha-ha moment on a $40 million project? A year after it started, my first comment is, I just don't know how it's possible. I don't even know how you can qualify that. Second comment is, in the same surprised, I think a lot of us learned at the last week, that in fact, there is an issue of permit. That in fact, the city of Miami Beach is operating without the proper permit. And in one of those meetings, when I came and I said, you know, Durham, and we were talking about Durham, how Durham is delaying the project. Well, that's not exactly the true story. The true story is that since February of 2019, Durham has been asking the city a few things that they need to operate. One of them, which, by the way, seems very logical to everybody that lives in a city, including the one of Miami Beach, you need proper permit. They don't have it. Not only that, they wrote a letter in early October to the city, still no answer. So those are the two preliminary points. Now, on a more constructive, positive way, we all want this to move forward and be done with it. So I'd like to suggest a few points to do it. And you alluded to the first point, Mr. Mayor. First point is, I think, the city of Miami Beach has to acknowledge the nightmare of a situation that is. City of Miami Beach has to do its proper mea culpa, and the city of Miami Beach has to say how this happened, like you were referring to, in the first place. And frankly, that could be a good homework to do for the inspector general that the public voted for to look into this, because this is a lot of money. So that's the first point. The second point is, city of Miami Beach has to do its work. A very good and capable people. Its work means one of them is the draining calculation, which, by the way, in parenthesis, this is what Durham has been asking. One of the issues that they have is there is no proper drainage calculation, which is, by the way, what the owners are saying in layman terms, how do I know it's going to work? It's the same question. So the second point is, City of Miami Beach has to put the resources, the proper resources, to hire the proper people in a fast time. And the question and your answer to it, apparently there's not a lack of funding. So if it's not a lack of funding, then let's do those drainage calculations and look at it works. Third point, and I heard you, Eric. Third point, we are saying, well, the homeowners have to sign. Once the homeowners have signed the harmonization letter, we can move forward if we have met. But if you are on the ground, if you talk to the homeowner, and I talk to a lot of them, what's the issue? Number one, the harmonization letter, the draft of it has been changed on several occasions. Number two, for each property, there's been different layout provided. One was in front of the property, was in this other property. So what's happening? We are asking or suggesting to those 98 plus 18, I think it's about 106, 108, or 118 homeowners to one, hire a law firm, yeah, because it's a legal document, and two, hire a civil engineer firm for them to be able to have a counterpoint. So what's the suggestion on a constructive way? The suggestion is, I think we could avoid all of this headache if the city of Miami Beach was going to provide guarantee, because then it would be much easier for my homeowners to say, well, you know what, I don't want to hire a $25,000 civil engineer to let me know if my property, which is worth about $4, $5, or $6 million or more, is going to be proper work. But if the city guarantees it, I will probably go along with it. I figured there was some type of guarantee from the city, which, by the way, seems to be a fair, reasonable request when there's work to be done. You know, what's my guarantee? What are you going to do? Fourth point, I never heard the subject being talked about, and I just can't comprehend one. I think we need all of us to have a seawall policy. See, we started with a roadway project, and what I found interesting is the name. We call it roadway project. Well, but the issue is not that. The issue is resiliency. The issue is raising of the water. The reason why it's called roadway project is very simple. It's because, in my humble opinion, it was the approach. We raised the road. But that's not the subject. The subject is, what are we going with the raising water? Part of the equation is obviously the necessity to have contiguous seawalls to provide incentive to the homeowners to redo the seawall. A seawall costs about $1,000 per linear foot, give or take a few. A lot of those harmonization houses that need harmonization, you have people who have been living there 5, 10, 25, 50 years. So we need to provide that incentive, because guess what's going to happen at the next king tide? Okay, the road might be dry, kind of, but the water is going to come in, and the homeowners who have a beautiful, strong wall, if the neighbors have not built the proper seawall, they are going to be, you know, to be flooded. So the fourth point is, I think it's very important to do that. Fifth, you also mentioned that to you, Mr. Mayor, and the fifth is, I know, Commissioner Malakoff, you say, we have to do something. We have to do something. I understand that, and I respect that, and we all want to do something. But let's do it right. Let's take the time to reset the clock. In other words, in all of those other neighborhood communities, why don't we just wait a little bit for this to happen? Which leads a few points. We need to have a timing. We need to make sure there's the resources. The homeowners are willing, able, want to make it happen. I think it's a fantastic opportunity in what you call a nightmarish situation, Mr. Mayor. It's a fantastic opportunity for you, for the current commissioner, for the future commissioner, to raise up to the occasion, to show not only to the resident of Palm Hibiscus and Star Island, but all of the residents that live in Miami Beach and, frankly, in the state of Florida, what a leadership, what courage, what determination, what vision can do in that very acute problem, but that can be solved. So we urge you to continue working, to look into it, and on those symbolic plans suggested, to make sure that we act upon it. And we want to do that with you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Pierre, and thank you for your leadership in your community. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi, Andres Acion. I own two houses in the problem area, 265 and 269 Palm Avenue. Both of my properties are flooded on the backyard every single time it rains, about 6 inches of water. There's houses now that, due to the increase of the road, actually, there's one house that can't even get into their garage anymore because of what occurred. There is my parents' living room is definitely under the street level, which will get flooded for sure in the event that this doesn't work. So it's been, 4 or 5 years of a nightmare situation there. The back of our houses, to get in and out is a nightmare. My parents are older, and it's a problem for them. I know that you guys have been working a lot and very hard and trying to get this job done, but we keep on getting dates and we keep on getting promises, and then 6 months go by, a year goes by, and nothing gets done. I don't know if all of you have physically gone by and walked them. I invite you personally to come to my house, and I'll show you what's happening there, but all of you should see it, because at the end of the day, this is a test for a lot of other neighborhoods, and you should see exactly what's happening there. And talking about seawall, the entrance to Palm Island, which on either side of the bridge belongs to the city, that seawall doesn't exist. So whenever there's a high tide, that water goes right into the grass, right into the island, and there's no seawall from the city that's stopping it.
If I may add after a few words after Andres, and I agree completely, a few words. You know, it's ironic, if I may say, Eric, that you say, we are going to position somebody at the guardhouse. Well, the question is, where physically are you going to put that person? And I'm going to tell you why I say that. Because of the lack of communication between the city and the postmaster, that guardhouse is now kind of an annex of the post office with mailboxes everywhere because the post office refused to deliver for lack of communication. So I don't think you can put that person there. And that's another issue. But that's an important issue that we have to resolve. And another lack of vision. You know, we just saw the generator being installed on the pump station. Well, somebody's going to say, oh, we had the aha moment here. Well, the aha moment on the west side of Palm Island, and when you visited the Commissioner Ariola and new Commissioner Samuel and mentioned it to you, well, the aha moment is that now the residents that live around the west circle of Palm Avenue are looking at the generator that is probably between 20 and 30 feet high. So they are at the ground level. One of the homeowner bought a house for $1.3 million, mentioned to us that he's going to invest about $4.5 million, and now all of a sudden, 24 hours ago, he discovered. But then we say, well, there's going to be landscape around. Well, I make a call to CIP and I say, can I have the plan of the landscape that is going to go around the generator? So at least to present it to the homeowner. Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have it. They've not been designed yet. Talk about the aha moment. So those are more additional points for you as our representative to whom we trust, because we've done that. You have done that with all our trust, to be able to fix it, take care, and become a shining example of what real leadership can do and should do.
Thank you. Okay. All right, so we're going to have I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Samuelin, for putting this on, because the residents of Palm and Hibiscus have been frustrated since we were running for office 2 years ago when we were canvassing, and I haven't really seen the movement that we anticipated. Both this project and Indian Creek have been really troubling and upsetting to me, because they've both been situations where we hear there weren't proper permits pulled that needed to be pulled, where we've modified and amended these projects to tens of millions of dollars over the past 2 years, giving both of these projects more and more money to try to appease the resident complaints, but yet the work doesn't really get done. We're not seeing the changes. So I feel as frustrated as you feel being here, because we keep asking why this is happening and why this is going on, and we're not getting answers up here either, except when a commissioner puts it on the agenda and we hear more or less the same information you do. I actually like your idea, and I was thinking the same thing while I was hearing the issue. I don't think I need a vote for this. I'm going to tell you, I'm publicly sending this to the Inspector General from my office. This doesn't take a commission vote to look into the Palm and Hibiscus project and the Indian Creek project to find out what went wrong with permitting, why we've budgeted so much money and it's gone over budget, why these projects aren't working correctly, why the residents are waiting years and years and years with no results. So on top of the work that our administration is doing, on top of the work I know the Sustainability Committee is doing, can you do this from the clerk? Do I need to do a formal email, or can you take this as my message to refer an investigation and oversight into the money and permitting in these two projects and report back to us?
Anyone else want to be heard?
Mayor, if I could just sort of summarize, and I appreciate the response from the administration. I appreciate our residents who have been just incredibly patient. Just to sort of bring this together, I would sort of summarize with five sort of points. One, and I've shared this directly with the manager, we need to act with urgency. We need to get this darn thing done. Number two, we need to do a much better job engaging with our residents. These 90-some-odd harmonization agreements is not a trivial task given what we're hearing, and I'm very curious how we're going to approach that, what the timing is, and Jimmy, to your point, you know, if we need to roll up our sleeves with you and the residents around what a reasonable time frame is, I know I will happily do that, but we need to figure out what we do around that, because that could be a real roadblock. So that's point number two. Point number three, I appreciate, Mayor, your willingness to have this body continue to engage. I think that workshop idea that you suggested is excellent. I will keep this item on the agenda for each of our meetings so we can monitor this progress. Number four, on seawalls, we are discussing that at our Sustainability Committee. I think this is a nudge that we got to take that discussion up and go faster. And finally, I too agree with Commissioner Gongora. When we brought in the Inspector General, it was to address waste and inefficiency. I think this is a classic example. So I think his idea is a good one, and I personally have already communicated my interest in having that done.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll say a couple things.
Sure.
You remember, when we designed these projects, we did not, as a city staff, include generators, because we knew precisely what he just described. These were going to be huge pieces of equipment in the middle of residential neighborhoods. So we did not originally, if you remember, those of you who were here, we did not recommend them in this project and other projects, because we knew the impact of them aesthetically in the neighborhoods, not to mention the cost. However, different neighborhoods, this being one of them, came forward and really insisted on having permanent generators. So it's not an aha moment. We figured there would be an aha moment in the neighborhoods when they saw these things installed. Obviously, we will be designing the landscaping around it. But, you know, it wasn't something that was surprised anybody. We didn't think they would be popular, and so I'm not shocked to see that they're not popular. With respect to the drainage, Pierre says that we need to do the drainage, and we haven't. We have met with 69 different property owners of the 98 drains on private property. That drainage work is done, and that was part of the package we sat down and met with them. That's why, because it was only after January that we could sit down and do the analysis and work, and we presented it to them, the harmonization agreements. Those are the ones that, I think of the 69, 10 had comments on them that we are reflecting. The others are going to get. The only ones that we're now finishing design work on are the 29 that are left. That all that, we believe, will be done by when, Eric?
Before things, first week of December. We will have all of them done, and we will meet with each of the property owners by the first week in December.
Okay. I just wanted to just stress those 2 points.
Okay. Thank you for the update and the discussion. Pierre, thank you for coming out, and sorry to keep you waiting.
Thank you. Thank you for the
report. Okay. Let's move to R7A, I think. Is that what's up next?
Yes, sir. R7A is a public hearing. Air right easement agreement bridge between Clevelander and Excess House.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, Jay Fink, Assistant Director of Public Works. The item before you is the second read in public hearing for the aerial easement, which bridges between two hotels, the Clevelander and the Essex House. Appraisal was done on this back in July 23rd, 2019. It had a market value of $135,000. There was a planning analysis that was completed. The proposed bridge is consistent with the neighborhood. At the previous commission meeting, it was accepted that there be and the administration's recommendation is to go forward with accepting a payment of $240,000 in addition to the 5/7 waiver.
Okay. This is a public hearing.
Yes, sir.
Without objection, the public hearing is open. Anybody want to be heard? Without objection, the public hearing is closed. Has the item been moved?
I'll move it.
Second.
Let's call the roll.
It's a voice vote.
No, it's a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Like sign nay, show it done unanimously. R7B.
R7B is also a public hearing. Accept a recommendation to waive bid, approved lease with New World Symphony LED screen storage.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep, Matt Kenny, Director of Tourism and Culture. So this is the final piece of the puzzle for the audio and video expansion for Soundscape Park with New World Symphony. All this item is for is to waive the bidding so that we can build a storage unit in the Penn Street garage, which will house New World Symphony's video screens that they're going to use for their wallcast to be able to expand the audiences, and they have said that they will make use for other city needs as well. So we will be taking up 3 parking spaces, 1 ADA space that will be relocated to a different space within that garage. And we just need an approval to move forward with that construction.
So for people who don't know, it's pretty exciting. There's going to be these huge video screens in Soundscape Park in the area beyond the main screen.
Yep.
So they're going to be able to really activate the entire park with a simultaneous broadcast.
Down by Lincoln Lane, they're going to be able to fill that whole space now with mobile screens.
Also allow perhaps Lincoln Lane, the back of the of Lincoln Road, to be activated just because maybe it'll be a little closer to the park. It's pretty neat amenity that I think will really...
And the video screens are being paid for by New World Symphony. They just need a place to store them, and we're going to build that with contingency funding that's already been identified, about $180,000 from this project.
Without objection, anybody want to be heard on this from the public? Seeing nobody wants to be heard, we'll close
the
public.
I move the item.
Second.
I move the second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And they show it done unanimously.
Thank you.
Thanks. Let's go to D, R7D.
R7D is execute underground easement for FPL, Carr Fisher Clubhouse, and annex facility.
Anybody want to move the item?
Moved.
Up.
Sorry, guys. At some point, though, now that we're incorporating all of this under this one agreement that's existing, we are going to go back out and bid, and then we're going to decide.
That was withdrawn. That item's not on the agenda.
Never mind.
Okay. Anybody want to move it?
I moved
the item.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Like sign nay, show it done unanimously. Let's go to R7F.
R7F is execute easement Tesla supercharger station.
Yes, I moved the
second.
Item.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Like sign nay, show it done. R7H.
Oh. R7H is accept recommendation better bus project.
Anybody want to move it?
No.
Can I ask a question on this one?
Yes, we'll allow questioning of what we do publicly.
Okay. No, I'm fine with what's in the agenda, which is basically what we recommended in neighborhoods, to recommend the ridership model to leave the Belle Isle trolley route. But I want to confirm, because we're not committing ourselves to this, I want to make sure that this gives us flexibility to look at our trolleys as this item moves forward through the county. Like, I'm not convinced I'm ready to pull out the Mid-Beach trolley yet, but I like this model. I'd like to work with it, but I want to confirm that giving this our blessing for tonight doesn't mean that we're agreeing to permanently taking out our trolleys should this pass at the county.
That's correct, Commissioner. In the item, we indicate that while I think that the concept of the ridership model is a very good one, some of the specific proposals that were made for our routes, like eliminating the Mid-Beach route or eliminating the service to Collins Park and to Belle Isle, those items we indicated in the memo were not supportive of. Certainly not at this point, but the general concept. So, no, we're not committing to anything at this point that we don't agree with.
Because I want to make it clear, we carved out Belle Isle because they came forward to neighborhoods. But there's other groups. Collins Park is nervous. The Mid-Beach neighborhood is concerned, especially a lot of people use the Mid-Beach trolley as a route to get to Mount Sinai Hospital that live in the Collins Quarter. So I don't want those people thinking that these trolleys are being pulled out. We're just approving this in theory, and the trolleys will be tweaked.
There is no route changes being approved tonight of any kind. Correct. All right, so.
Commissioner Alamon.
I'm a little confused about the Belle Isle trolley. Didn't we already terminate the Belle Isle trolley due to very, very low ridership? I thought I remember that you all studied it, and it was like 11 people a day.
Yeah, we have, Commissioner, we have not terminated it. What is
still
being discussed?
Place.
It's still in place. What's being discussed is to reduce the frequency of service to Belle Isle, and that's a neighborhood's committee
has
item next
the,
month.
Since there's been more discussion about this item with the Belle Isle residents and obviously the attended neighborhoods, has the ridership increased?
It has. We have seen an increase.
So what, can you
in
update us on current ridership?
At
because at 11 people per day, the cost per person, it doesn't pencil out to run a trolley of that expense for 11 people a day. But if the ridership has increased now due to awareness, I'd like to be privy to that.
Yes, absolutely. Good evening, Milos Majstorovic, Transit Manager. So the ridership at Belle Isle from May through October is approximately 88 passengers per day. So it's absolutely higher than it used to be.
What is the operating cost per rider?
Overall of our citywide trolley service is $2.25 approximately.
And what is it on Belle Isle?
Well, we would have
I don't think
to
we've done that calculation specifically, it. But we could.
Okay. I mean, I would recommend that the administration do that analysis, maybe not just picking on Belle Isle, but really, periodically, route-wide, we ought to be understanding what the different routes are costing per person, because I've heard conversation, for example, of, and I'm really encouraged to hear that the ridership has really grown exponentially. I think that's excellent. And does lean towards keeping those routes. But I've also heard discussion about shortening wait times on routes where we have trolley service. But we have many parts of the city that don't have any trolley service at all. So I encourage you to do pilots. We've talked about Mid-Beach, Alton Road. We have the entire western expanse of Mid-Beach. And the argument you all have always given me is, well, it's single-family homes. It's not that dense. And that's true. But on the other hand, we have very, very many families, and you could be providing transportation service for young people that otherwise don't have transportation, not to mention that, those residents have, equal right and to demand the same level of service as other residents in other parts of the city. So I still, as I guess, would just take the privilege to encourage you to do some pilots in some areas where you assume the ridership maybe won't be what you're looking for, but you could be surprised, as in the case of Belle Isle. It's grown so much. That could also happen in Mid-Beach. And to periodically, be able to answer those questions of what's my cost per rider on each one of these routes.
Yeah, Commissioner, I think there's an item going to neighborhoods where we're looking at some changes we can make now. We know the folks south of 5th have asked for some better frequency. We have right now three different trolleys that sort of go through Belle Isle. That's probably too much service. So there's an opportunity perhaps to scale back one or two of those lines, not impact their service in a meaningful way, but improve frequency. We're looking at 11th Street, which has really the lowest ridership, and maybe we could, and the highest, or the worst frequency, like every 45 minutes. We might be able to really there substitute on-demand freebie or something that will give them right. better timing, and then that train, those trolleys could then provide better frequency. So we're looking at all that, and I think right. we're going to be discussing that in neighborhoods.
Right. I mean, where you run routes and how frequently you run them should not be based on who screams the loudest. Right. It ought to be based on your solid analysis and data capture, and you ought to be seeking to provide trolley service to all parts of the beach, not just the high-rise corridors.
I believe that one reason that we do need to provide them to the multifamily areas, including Belle Isle, is because of the density. And sure. I think that Belle Isle is now adding more units. There's buildings going up there. And that'll add more riders. I think it's important, even though Belle Isle is going to be maybe $3 or $4, whatever it is, per person, you have to look at the whole trolley service as a whole and not just segment out one group here or one group there. If there's a density of population, they need to be served. And particularly where the residents, like in its parts of South Beach and where Rebecca Towers is and the other areas where there are senior centers, they need trolley service because the bus service has been erratic. It has been not frequent. It has sometimes not come at all when people are waiting and they sit in the hot sun. And if the bus service really were on time, as it is in some cities, and streamlined and air-conditioned and come on time, I think we'd have more people riding the buses. But in the meantime, for Miami Beach, I think trolleys have been a wonderful answer. And I would encourage us to continue trolleys wherever there's multifamily areas. And if it's possible to do a pilot in single family, in mid-beach, I think there would be a demand, but whether the demand would be enough, I don't know. I doubt it.
It's fun.
It's worth trying.
Okay. By the way, on a related subject, I took freebie the other day and enjoyed it. My hair got messed up.
It's hard a great to do. Service. It is windy.
Okay. Just to give you an example of things coming together, as you know, the work we were doing for the CRA to go to the county, we've done some excellent analysis of how the North Beach workforce really works throughout the city. And it explains in part why the Collins Express has just taken off. And in fact, one of the things we're looking at is, because the ridership in Mid-Beach has fallen a little bit, is perhaps have one less vehicle, move that from Mid-Beach to the Collins Express, because those are packed. People are, it really is moving our workforce from North Beach throughout the city. And as well as I think maybe some tourism. So we're constantly assessing that and as you all indicate.
Okay. We still have this item. It's been moved and seconded, right?
I'll move it if not.
Well, Jose, what do you recommend? What's your recommendation for a motion on this item?
Our recommendation is to approve the motion that was made by Neighborhoods Committee last week. By way of a resolution, and we'll continue working with Transit Alliance to try to work through these concerns, the Collins Express, the Mid-Beach trolley. What the Transit Alliance is looking for is some sort of an endorsement, whether they looked at two different concepts, the coverage concept and the ridership concept, which way are we leaning towards? And at Neighborhoods Committee, the recommendation was to lean towards the ridership concept, which is the one that maximizes ridership potential. And that is the one that it proposes to eliminate the Mid-Beach trolley as well as the 11th Street Loop, the Collins Park extension, and the Belle Isle. So we'll continue to work with Transit Alliance to work out the best arrangement for the city, of course.
Okay. Are we voting on this?
I move it as it appeared in the agenda.
So as is.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Like, sign, nay. Show it done unanimously.
Yeah, Commissioner, I see the memo clearly said that we're not in agreement with those recommendations. So
I know, that's like the ridership concept. That's why I'm sitting here making faces, I guess, to myself and to you. You saw them. it just doesn't seem cooked to me. This doesn't seem like our administration has a recommendation that's in line. Is this time sensitive?
Transit Alliance did request that we take action before they go to the Board of County Commissioners in December, I believe, and there is a representative from Transit Alliance here.
Because I guess that's okay. That's all right. Because I guess in terms of our connectedness to the rest of the county, of course we want the ridership model because we're trying to get people to their jobs on mass transit. So I fully agree with that. But inside the city of Miami Beach, we might have other priorities in addition to that priority that would cause us to layer in some additional things at our own discretion as a city. And I would want to make sure in any motion that we're not closing the door on that, that through the Office of the City Manager, if there was some other thing that we felt we wanted to do for another priority other than ridership to jobs, that we would do that.
If I may?
Sure.
So, I just want to clarify what happened at neighborhoods, mm-hmm. because that's actually not what happened. What happened was we said we are conceptually in agreement with the ridership model, provided that some of these other loops are looked at, that there may be tweaks to it, that this is not an endorsement fully, that we are willing to eliminate some of that. We were very specific to task transportation to continue working on those specific loops. We did not, so the recommendation in this agenda does not say one and recommending cutting everything out. So
correct.
just so you know.
Good.
I just wanted to clarify that. So
okay.
It's more about conceptually understanding that we want to work towards ridership.
If that's what everybody just voted yes on, then I will vote yes on that.
That's what it was, is right, Jose?
That's absolutely correct.
That's our story. And we're
I just wanted to clarify that because it is very, it's very involved.
It's a little murky there.
No, yeah, very.
R7I.
With all of that.
R7I is appoint Kathy Brooks, Miami-Dade County Beach Corridor Trunk Line request.
You can't speak, is your
item. I move the item.
Any
second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nay. Show that done. Thank you for that, by the way, since it's my appointment. Got a couple of quick things. We've done D.
Mayor, we haven't done
more.
R7D if you.
Oh, R7.
Dog. D.
D. Oh, I see. We
did
that.
That's the item I thought you guys were discussing when I brought it up and you
said.
We did it.
Yeah, R9G is done. It needs to be done.
Oh, yeah.
R9 what?
G as in goat.
Okay. This is the last item of the night?
No. Yes, sir, because R9F was a referral to neighborhoods.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. And then we've got
C4E.
All right.
Yes.
So
let's
go ahead and do R9G.
Discuss North Beach Boat Parade.
Quickly.
Real simple. Carolina, do you want to come up? Because you're the mastermind.
I did not see Carolina there.
And she's hungry, apparently.
She was.
At this point, she's hangry.
I don't know the difference between her normal and her hangry.
hopefully this will be quicker. This is a small request. Carolina, how long have you kind of been organizing this boat parade?
So since 2013, we started with a handful of boats that went around Stillwater Drive. The next year, we dedicated the parade to the men and women who serve our community, police, and fire, which I'm proudly wearing their shirt today, and Coast Guard. It's really a homegrown, organic event that has gained boats and viewership throughout the years. And we've been working with a kind of a shoestring budget because we want to keep this a community event. But at this point, we would really love to partner with the city to promote this to our residents, to get more boaters out there. And really, this is about celebrating each other as a community and celebrating our police and fire that do such an amazing job for us every day.
Yeah, so like with anything we do, I want us to be the best. Fort Lauderdale has an amazing light boat parade, and I know you have been organizing this really in your spare time on a shoestring budget. And I think the city, for very little money, but with our resources can help elevate this. And I think, you know, this is only a month away. It's December 7th, so this will just sort of be the first step. But next year, I'd love to see us with all the different marinas here and the yacht brokers and everyone who's got boats in the backyard, like really get everybody involved in this. People will donate boats. We can put the mayor on a dinghy and maybe we can sink it. But, you know, we can get our fire boat, our police boat out there. We can have a lot of fun. This will be a community event. Yes. Kids, everybody come out, support local businesses. We could hopefully find a place where it's the Shane Rowing Center or the property up where the church is for different viewing areas. People for a lot of to open up their homes. It becomes a big, you know, community thing. So this year my ask is, I think, $5,000 just to help cover some costs. And then have the city help market this. If people have boats they want to donate, if we have some centers, some places where we can have viewing parties, let's start organizing that. Let's help.
You got $5,000, Jimmy?
What?
Do you have $5,000?
Do I have $5,000?
Uh-huh.
For the
Jimmy
boat show?
From North Beach.
I'm sure we have.
I'll move it.
In our tourism and.
Carolina,
what are you moving to promote this year and use city resources to help blow it up?
Should we talk about this for
30
minutes?
No.
I'll second it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Carolina, can
all
you tell everybody?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay.
Can Carolina, you just tell everybody when it is so people know since you're here?
Yes. So, NorthBeachBoatParade.com. It is a boat parade that we have over the holidays every year in December, and we welcome everybody. It's a free event. You can go to any of the parks along the route and see it for free. You can join on a friend's boat, contact us on the website, and come out and celebrate with us. And sponsors, we want you to take out our PAL kids, our commissioners, our special residents. We really want this to be an amazing community event. So thank you.
Awesome.
Send us information because a lot of us have newsletters and
yes.
Facebook
okay.
things we put out. Let us know so we can help you promote it.
Great. Thank you.
Caroline, thank you. I didn't see you. I would have called you up earlier if I'd seen you.
No, you
were usually not that quiet.
Mayor, can I have 30 seconds of personal privilege?
Yes, you may.
Seconds.
But have we voted on this already?
So,
is this before
we
vote on it?
Oh, yeah, I moved it. I don't think we voted on it. And
we
Samuel
did?
And second.
We did vote
we did.
On
okay,
it.
Okay, it's all good.
So are we, oh, we have one more item.
Yes. No, your chief of staff prepared for us a long time ago these really beautiful little cards for each of us and that has the city seal pin. And I found that I had one left. And the person that I wanted to present it to is still here. And that is Ms. Susan Askew, who is the writer for the RE Miami Beach blog, which is a great blog. She spends many, many hours. She spends many hours writing up all of the happenings of Miami Beach, and particularly related to real estate and land development. And she does so fairly and factually, documenting both sides, keeping her personal opinion out of it. I think it's a great service to the city and its residents. And so I wanted to present you, Ms. Askew, with my little pin.
And it's got absolutely no value, so you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry about it in any way impairing your judgment.
Am I mistaken? Is this your last official meeting?
This is my last official meeting.
No, we got another.
Not over yet.
She has another meeting.
Okay. It's not over yet.
All right. C4E.
Yes, sir. Referral to Neighborhoods, Parks and Recreations Facility Advisory Board motions. It is an item from Commissioner Samuelin. It was separated by Commissioner Steinberg. Oh.
Commissioner Steinberg, go ahead.
Well,
one
of the reasons I separated was to torture everybody up here.
Yeah.
Not to put business when we have awards and presentations. But no, listen, I agree with the spirit of all of these motions. I support all of these motions. The reason I pulled it is because I thought it was unnecessary to actually have it at Neighborhoods, because motion one was to appoint board member Sean Smith as the ex officio non-voting member. We all support that. That's not in our purview to discuss. That's actually already been done because the committee's already agreed to that, and that's full support. So that's done. I'm trying to make our committees also more efficient. Motion two, their motion to, with the marketing communications of tourism and culture, we're already doing that. So that's good. Yay. Number three, motion three, we have that mandate already about the Recreational Facility Advisory Board recommends that the design of the skate park take into consideration prioritizing resiliency and sustainability. I spoke to the city manager. They've already made that the mandate. So that's happening. And motion four was that the Parks and Rec Department work with the Department of Tourism and Culture to explore flamingo-inspired art installations within Flamingo Park. We literally passed that last meeting. So I think, bravo, the best item yet. It's all done. Check.
Mayor, if I may.
Commissioner,
if
absolutely, you may respond.
If we are all done, I would gladly say that. I'm not sure that we are. And I think the Parks and Rec Board had some specific things. For example, number two with the full marketing, as I understand the richness of what they're looking for, I think in a word, they would probably say, we haven't fully done that. If there are items in their motions that are done, then, of course, no need to discuss them. But my sense is within that, specifically that marketing, and there may even be about the skate park.
The skate park with the resiliency city manager, please comment.
I mean, remember, part of the whole GOB was we put extra money in there for to implement resiliency in all the projects, and the skate park is one of them.
So the idea was actually to make the skate park a model for resiliency. So not just LED lights, but to really look outside of the box and see how this could be a beacon for resiliency in our city. So we invited Betsy Wheaton to our meeting. She was super excited. Awesome. Flavia came, and we have some really amazing ideas that really need, we have some time because it's in tranche three, but there's some really creative stuff that we can do and make it, like I said, a shining example, not just.
I'm fully supportive. I was just under the impression a lot of these things were done because the motions are very, broad and not very descriptive, and a lot of times when we just add all these motions in, it would be easier, Commissioner Samuel, and if there are two motions out of this that you would like to further dissect, we can add those separately. Do you know what I mean? To discuss the resiliency portion of the skate park is fine, and the marketing, and I guess you can explain at neighborhoods what you mean about the marketing.
Yes. And that's actually part of a much bigger idea that we have. I don't know if right now is the time to talk about it, but it is part.
We have all night.
We have all night.
No, but it was nothing about the Parks Board. It was more about process up here. When we just take the full LTCs, because we get them, and then we transfer it over to
this is the first time Commissioner Samuelin has picked up our motions. I was so grateful. And I.
Okay, this has been a great discussion. Can you bring, if we pass this motion, can you bring it with the appropriate
detail
of what has been addressed and what hasn't, because I think Commissioner Steinberg raises some good points, and I think Commissioner Samuelin may be right. There are pieces of it that are uncooked. All right?
Okay.
Is there a motion? Is there a second? All those in favor say aye. Show it done. Thank you. Have a good night.